Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Boxing Scene's official radio show, Leave It in the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, along with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and Ernesto Gabillon. Producer David Chen, who works the switchboards. If you want to call in at 347-215-7598. Want to talk some boxing with everybody out there, man. Show the whole world that boxing is not dead. It's alive and well. What's going on, Gabe? How's everything going for you, brother? I know you've had a busy week. As myself, I've had a busy week.
I don't know. A whole lot's going on with me, man. I'm just, you know, writing a lot, life stuff, just trying to survive in Los Angeles, you know. It's kind of where I'm at today. Probably should have had a couple coffees before I came on the air, but I'm going to do the best I can.
If you decide to brew up some coffee, I'm brewing up some Coronas right now because I've been kind of weak, man. Been busy going up and down, trying to take care of things. You know, we got some things coming along for Leaving of the Ring, Premier Round One Magazine. We're in negotiations right now with them, so just to let the fight fans know and all that we are in negotiations with Premier Round Magazine. What that is a bilingual magazine. It's almost like Ring Magazine. You know, they just it's more of a Sports Illustrated type of style. And what we're trying to work out is for them to give us some free subscriptions so we can send them out to the fight fans, you know, so that we can keep the fight fans aware of what's going on in the boxing world, man. Hey, you know, who's back in the news again is Mr. X. You know, we talked about him last week being on Ustream, but now he's talking about eating sushi and this and that and getting people's cultures, backgrounds all mixed up. You know, the funny thing is that as soon as I heard about it, and I was on there, to tell you the truth, I was on when he did that. You know, some folks call me up and they're like, hey, Ruff, what do you think, man? What do you think about this whole rant? You know, he got really racist. And I said, listen, I don't condone what he did. I'm not going to back up what he did, you know. But I will say this, you know, as a human being, and I'm a human being, and there's some people out there, man, that really honestly, they don't have anything better to do but to kind of hate on you. And when you got somebody repeatedly throwing on a chat room on the board there while he's talking to the fans and trying to interact the fans and calling them a monkey and the N-word and you know, calling them a chicken and putting up his profile up with a face on a KFC bucket, the guy eventually is going to snap. And I was, you know, for what, being three up, doing the Ustream up for like 3 or 4 days, that had been happening. And I was just wondering, okay, when is he going to snap? And that's exactly what happened. Now, I know he came back and he apologized, and rightfully so. It was the wrong thing to do because you don't fight fire with fire. He should have brought a bucket of water. He should have known better. He should have known better, but he didn't. And it's unfortunate, you know, but for the racist people that were being racist towards him, you know, being that he's a black man in America, and, you know, we're Latinos, and if you're any other nationality rather than white, you're going to feel the effect. And even white people nowadays feel the effect of prejudice out there. You know, if you live in California, there's a lot of white folks that feel prejudice.
Everybody feels prejudice. You know, everybody feels some sort of racism on some level. Everybody's got their own biases. I mean, I live in Koreatown. It's not the friendliest part of L.A., but I'm sure there's a lot of places. You know, it's taken the Korean people around here a while to get to used to me or to know me as somebody that goes to their businesses. And you know, but I mean, you think about boxing, and it's a very racial sport. Mexico versus Puerto Rico. The last few years, we've seen the Philippines versus Mexico. A black dude in Mexico, Roger Mayweather talked about being like the executioner. They've also given Pacquiao that name. It's kind of a casually racist sport, if you really think
about it. It is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What Floyd did, I think Steve Kim said it perfect. He's not racist. He's just an imbecile. And to me, the guy is just kind of like a boxing savant. He's like a Mozart, you know. He comes out the crib being great at what he's supposed to do, you know, or just born to do it, and then spends his whole life training at that. He's brilliant in the ring. I won't take that away from him. I mean, watching that Mosley fight, I've watched it a few times. It's one of the few main fights later in his career that I've rewatched.
You know, I'm not going to go.
The ring, he's just kind of an idiot, you know.
You know, I'm not going to go so far and call him Mr. X an idiot because, like I said, when you're human and if somebody keeps it's like if somebody keeps poking at you, eventually the human thing is to react. And that's exactly what he did. He reacted. I'm pretty sure Steve Kim was on the Ustream and somebody consistently called him, you know, hey, you know, Chinese guy and made fun of him and just keep throwing it out there. Eventually he's going to react. Now, the way Mayweather reacted was
I don't agree with that.
Well,
I don't think it has to do with the fans. And I think it's been a big debate this week, and I've gotten a lot of emails about that, of people going, well, how come it's okay for Pacquiao's fans to say that about Mayweather, but when he says it, what does his fans have to do with what Floyd said? Not really much. You know, I get a lot of hate mail, man. And you know, the only time I snap is, on Twitter is when I have an issue, not when I'm just having a freak out. To me, he was that casually racist. He thought he was being funny. He thinks he's got a ton of money, and he's kind of above it all. And I don't think that he has a real grasp of what the rest of us go through. Like when our cameraman was saying, if you see the YouTube clip from this week on Max Boxler, the TNR, there's a shot of Doug Fisher watching Floyd talk. I think it's before the Oscar De La Hoya fight. He looks totally annoyed. Floyd created this character for himself, and we don't really like this guy. And he keeps doing him, keeps upping the ante. Well, this was him upping the ante, but I think this is, in a sense, who he really is. In that interview that Doug's watching.
I think in a lot of ways, this is what I think, Gabe. I think in a lot of ways, almost like Tupac Shakur, which, you know, was had this whole thing, you know, what happened in Vegas with Mike Tyson. In a lot of ways, if you follow Tupac, I used to follow Tupac when he was up in the Bay Area before he even became Tupac. He was the Digital Underground. I think in a lot of ways, almost similar, not as a thug and all that, but almost similar like Tupac, where they end up becoming the character they created. And that's exactly what you're saying. I totally agree on what you guys are saying there. I think Floyd has now become this persona of money, and he doesn't know how to be himself anymore at all.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe it's a Michael Jackson thing. You know what I mean? That's kind of where I was going with it. It's just like, you raise this guy to do this job, and he becomes that job, and his whole identity is that job. But outside the ring, he's kind of just a malformed person. And then we all kind of are, dude. I'm as fucked up as the next guy, probably more so. But but this guy, you know, he doesn't really know how to get along with others, you know? And like,
he doesn't have to play well with others. Yeah.
No, he doesn't. And there was an article I read in the New Yorker, somebody gave me, it was a boxing article covering Mayweather Mosley. And one of the stories was, you know, the week of the promotion, they're going up and signing the gloves that are going to be given away as souvenirs. Mosley goes up and Floyd's beaten him there by like a half hour and it's gone. And there's something like 320 boxing gloves sitting there or something like that, 320 pairs. It's like a day's worth, you know, of signing them. And Floyd has taken up all the space on all the gloves with his name, both pairs. You know, like he'll put Floyd on one, Mayweather
right,
on the other. There's no room for poor Shane to do it. And Nazim Richardson goes, you know, even in kindergarten, there's just some kids that just need to be seen.
There's some children that need time out, you know.
That's Floyd.
In a lot of ways, money is doing what he's got to do to get underneath your skin and in your head, and that's exactly what I think he was aiming for when he was talking about Manny Pacquiao. And I think he knew that's gonna create a lot of buzz to really honestly take away some of the limelight that was shining on Manny and Antonio Margarito, and it's exactly what he did. He reminded everybody, hey, I'm back in the mix. Here I am. Don't forget about me. Just because I didn't sign for that fight, I'm still here. Let's let some fight fans in on the conversation, see what they got to say. Let's go with, what's up, brother Grindshine? What's up, man? How you doing? What's your thoughts on right now? You're on live. Leave it.
Hey, what's good, y'all? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, brother.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. Man, it's like this, man. Mayweather's just starting early, stopping it up Manny Pacquiao, getting into his head. And one thing I do notice about Floyd Mayweather, every time he either retires or pulls away from a big fight, the people that he needs to fight, that is his big fight, end up getting beat by each other. Just like when he pulled out a while back, and then Margarito ended up fighting Miguel Cotto, got Miguel Cotto out the way. It's the same thing right here, and I think this is a very dangerous fight for Manny Pacquiao, and Floyd Mayweather knows exactly what he's doing. Either he's going to get Pacquiao in this fight, or he's going to get Pacquiao himself.
You
either
think
or.
It's one way? Grant, let me ask you this, because what I'm hearing, what you're saying, I'm starting to see what you're talking about. You think it's some way money's like, look, I'm going to get in Manny Pacquiao's mind a little bit, so maybe he gets beat up by Margarito, and I don't have to face Manny Pacquiao, and I can go back and tell everybody, you see, you guys were all talking about this Filipino guy, you know, and saying that he could beat me, and he gets beaten by a guy that I beat. You think in some way he's trying to mess him up and make him lose his concentration so he does not focus on Margarito? He focuses on what he's saying?
Yes, and I noticed it. Yeah, and exactly. I noticed it with Floyd Mayweather. I think this fight, if people are really underestimating Antonio Margarito, raps or no raps, Antonio Margarito is going to get impacted. The biggest fight of his life, and Mayweather knows exactly what he's doing, and that's what he is doing. He's psyching him out. Margarito is going to get to Pacquiao, and then either he'll end up facing Margarito, the winner of the match, I think, or Pacquiao, and he'll already be softened up, and Mayweather will beat him easily.
What do you think, Gabe?
There's nothing in Floyd's history to suggest he's going to take a tough fight, much less fight Margarito or Pacquiao. Maybe he's trying to orchestrate from the outside. I think he's just up really, you know, past his bedtime and being an idiot, personally. He can't stand being out of the spotlight. You're absolutely right about the timing of it, but it's like, you know, I grew up the youngest of four boys, and it was a bit of a spoiled kid. I remember my brother Tom's birthday one year. I was all pissed off because everybody was giving him attention and not me, the baby that everybody was always doting on. So I was an asshole all day and ruined the day, and that's what Floyd's doing. I'm not a part of this party, so I'm going to be an asshole. And look at me, talk about me, talk about, I mean, you know how many articles are written just about Floyd? Meanwhile,
mm-hmm.
2 weeks back to back, we've had two fight of the years in a row, and maybe one fight report from each writer about it. Not a lot of guys wrote about Giovanni Segura before it. You know, that's what makes me sick. And when we're taking up airtime talking about a guy that's not fighting, that doesn't give a shit about fans, hasn't given us a great fight in a long time, the fights that we want. Margarito was one. And Pacquiao was another. And you can just flat out say he's ducked both those fights. Fuck him. I don't want to talk about him anymore, to be quite honest.
Look at Gabe, yeah. He's on fire.
Let
me ask you, man, did you quit smoking? Is that what it is?
I'm training right now. Yeah, I'm just butt to butt, my friend.
Butt
to
butt.
You know what I mean? All these guys
right.
that claim to be boxing writers, and all they can write about is a guy that doesn't fight. Meanwhile, I'm writing my third article on Klitschko Peter this week. You know, I wrote about the 90s heavyweights. I wrote twice about Giovanni Segura leading up to his fight, and then once after for his victory interview.
There's other fighters out there.
Everybody ignores them.
I agree with you, but it is something that people do want to talk about, and it is on the minds of certain people. And I think that is one of the major things, you know. But as soon as that happened, I was like, man, you know what? Okay, it happened. Let it go. It's not part
exactly.
of boxing. It's really part of his you know, way of being his – it's just his flashy personality and stuff. Hey, Grouchy, I'm going to put you on hold really quick because I got to pass in some other fight fans. Let's see. Angelica, you're on the line right now. Leave it in the room.
Hi.
What's on your mind? Hi, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going? I'm good. I just wanted to point out to a lot of people who may or may not know this, you know, Floyd is signed with, you know, this man. He's got control over his life, and he decides what's let out there and what's not. And,
I'll
I mean,
it,
he's basically Richard Schaefer with Golden Boy. And so my point being is that when we're going to dog out Mayweather, who's coming to the rescue now? I mean, who's stepping up and saying and giving him his, you know, his little response letter, his little cue cards to read? No one. So if you think about it, I mean, it's almost like they're letting him commit suicide. I mean, it's like, let's look at the, I mean, there are people in, who can decide, hey, Mayweather, let's step aside. You need to do this, or you need to say this, and you need to say that. I mean, they have people who do that. No one's doing it for him. He's just being shoved out there in front of us all, and it's going to make him crazy. Are they trying to get rid of him, or what? I mean, or is this actually being used?
subbed out there. He started. I have my own Ustream channel. I know how this works. You have to create that for yourself and figure out how to put a camera on and broadcast yourself to the world.
No, I'm not talking about that part.
You're talking about who's representing. Are you talking about Al Heyman?
No, I'm talking about Golden Boy.
Oh, they don't. They're not his promoter. He's not signed with them. That's all.
Well, when did he not get signed? I thought he was signed with. Wasn't that when he was like with Richard? Well, they were doing negotiations.
No, the way it works with Al Heyman fighters, Al Heyman represented like Jermaine Taylor. He has Andre Berto. He has Floyd. He has Paul Williams. Andre Durrell. And he has very close ties to HBO. He's an advisor, not a manager. Apparently, there's not anything on paper. But he's basically calling the shots because he has such close ties to HBO. What Al Heyman does is have all these fighters with these promoters, but there's no real paper with those guys. They're kind of talent brokers so that he's not breaking the Muhammad Ali Act by managing and promoting. So,
my question is this. With that racist rant, will that be able to be used in a court? Because is Pacquiao still going? Is he? Is that case still pending with against Richard Schaefer and Oscar for the slander for the steroid use? Is that still okay? My point is are they going to be able to use that in a defense and go, look, really, he's mad. He should be mad at this guy because look, this guy's the one that's
absolutely
that he has the problem with. That's
I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not sure. I think they've issued apologies, and like Oscar removed his blog, which was part of the lawsuit, one of the things he said on Ring TV. They may be out of it. I haven't done a, this week update on it. So last I heard it was still on. But also it's interesting to note about this video is because there was another video that somebody took from Doghouse Boxing Forum, and it was Floyd in Washington, D.C. talking to the crowd. They added that after they had filed the lawsuit. So I imagine that they're going to throw things. I know somebody's saying freedom of speech. But, you're also slandering the guy's name by saying he's on steroids. There's a big difference. There's freedom of speech, but there's also, you should be responsible for what you say as well.
Right.
Floyd broadcast himself. I agree. He's twisting in the wind. I totally agree with you. Somebody needs to – he needs to get a publicist, man. Maybe Omar Henry.
Yeah.
It's free. I don't know.
Yeah, let's hope not.
Thank you for
calling. Sorry.
Any other
yeah, thank you for explaining that. I appreciate it.
Hey, my pleasure.
Okay.
I'll talk to you later. Dave? I think we lost Dave. Oh, man. Dave dropped out. Now I've got to sit here and talk. Well, let's talk about this weekend's fight. It's a pretty big weekend, man. We've got – let's just go straight to Saturday. There's a lot of prospect action on Friday. But on Saturday, at the Commerce Bank, Dave, are you there?
I'm here. I had myself on mute by accident. My bad.
Well, thank God, dude. My heart was beating like a rabbit. Could you please be point guard again? Because I'm not good at it.
Well, when she was talking, Angelique, and thanks for calling in, Angelique. I was trying to say goodbye and all that. But, I think what she was trying to say, this is the point that I think that she was trying to get across, is that it's almost what she was trying to say. There's nobody, he has been groomed practically his whole career. He was groomed by his father to be a world champion. Then he goes with promoters and PRs to groom him. Almost the way Oscar De La Hoya has been groomed, where Oscar De La Hoya, really honestly, his personality and his persona has never really been revealed by the media or anybody else because of the fact that there are people there to make sure that he maintains himself. I think what she's saying, there is nobody there no longer to monitor Floyd Mayweather, that now he's almost acting like how a married man that's been locked up in his house for 10 years, that when he goes out for one night, he ends up acting a fool. I think that's what she's going around with that. I think that's what she was trying to push and shove to. You know what I mean?
But, I mean, you got to make sure that what you're broadcasting, you and I know this firsthand, that you better be safe, man, about what you're broadcasting. You better, you got to be responsible about it. I've actually dropped some F-bombs, probably more than I wanted to on the show. But I'm just upset by it. I look at it, I think a common theme in on our show and on our conversations off the show is how do we help boxing? What can we do that's positive? I know I shine a lot of things on the negatives of the sport, but you know, I'm more interested in how to be positive. And to me, this isn't a positive, and it's annoying to me that it gets, you know, Segura and Calderon wasn't on ESPN, but this is. This is on PTI, because those dudes aren't going to watch the good fights. And it bothers me that people think he's the face of boxing when to me, he's not. The face of boxing is Klitschko versus Peter too. It's Bam Bam Rios against Anthony Peterson. That's the face of boxing. What's happening this Saturday? These great fights. And with Floyd, you know, he's just on his own. He's decided to be on his own, away from the sport, not dealing with the rankings, doesn't care about the belts, doesn't care about giving us exactly the fight that we want. So why should I care about him?
I think a lot of fight fans feel this, almost the same like you, but it's the casual fans that outnumber us, you know? And I think that's down in the South, what's hurting us and stuff. And then you got HBO that is not helping us out. I heard about the Bantamweight tournament where the first set are going to be held in Mexico, and it's like, why in Mexico? How many fight fans are going to be able to fly out to Mexico to watch these fights? You know?
Yeah, dude.
I don't know whether it's because they want to save money or it's because of, the venues don't want to pay it out. I have no clue, you know, but it just, to me, it just makes no sense where they're going to have it in Mexico and expect American fans to fly out there. You know, I don't get it.
You got to match the venue to the fight, and I'm not sure if it matches. You know, it's weird. I mean, I kind of want to go. I'm actually thinking about going. I mean, we'll get like Felipe Leon, and we'll hire some mercenaries to guard us. But I'm more concerned about like safety. You know, you know that more than anything. I asked Steve, and he's like, you know, I got to admit, I'm still a little nervous about going down there, and I don't blame him. You know, the drug war has not exactly died. I didn't understand that either, dude, when they said Mexico. I was like, really? There? I mean, it's kind of close, I guess. I could probably drive. But, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I think a lot of people feel the exact same way. They're thinking, like, you know, come on, man. You know, Mexico, the drug war. Do I want to get shot? Not really. You know, even though we can get shot over here in our own backyards. But what I'm thinking is that if you want to attract more American fans and more casual fans, which I think this Bantamweight tournament is fantastic. It's a tournament that's really honestly needed, especially HBO hosting it. It's something that needs to be done. But you're going to put the first set of fights in Mexico. That makes no sense. I mean, it's already bad enough, HBO. You're not giving us the fights that we want. You're making sure that your home fighter is fighting some, you know, pillow padding people to pad up the records of your home fighters. But come on, man! I mean, the whole bantamweight tournament, there is no padding there. These are real guys that are real threats in their own division. They're going to be facing each other. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, look. They throw pay-per-views, and they put the shittiest pay-per-view cards out there, okay? Let's be honest. HBO throws some really shitty HBO pay-per-view cards. But I guarantee if you put that banner away and you threw it out there and you put it on pay-per-view, it wouldn't be a big pay-per-view, but I bet you a lot of people would be a little bit more like, hey, you know what? I'll go see it in Vegas. That's worthy to be in Vegas. Not Marquez and Diaz, too.
Yeah, that fight could have gone in Mexico. That would have been fine. You know, that would have been great. You know, the one thing I will say about it, though, is that people will go. You know, it may not be American fans, but they will definitely they'll definitely fill up the house. I mean, you know, Mexico is going to go see that fight, you know. So there's at least that. I mean, there is, you know, like when we saw that the Maidana fight and Corley fight, there was like 11,000 people there. You know, in Mexico, I can expect that place to fill up. At the very least, world-class boxing is being shown all over the world. You know, that to me is the positive out of it. The negative out of it is, you know, dude, I want to go see that fight. I want it in some place where I could go see it. So, yeah, I mean, it is a problem. But at the same time, you know, at least people are going to go see it. It's not like they put it at, you know, I don't know, the Tachi Palace or something where there's only like a few people are going to be able to see it. And, you know, if it sells out, What do you think about this, what's going on with the WBA? Them recognizing Felix Sturm as the middleweight super champion, Gennady Golovkin is the interim champion. And then there's another dude, there's a fight between Hassan Adam Jakam, and I can't even say these names. Abdendil Kurtzen, they're going to fight as well. You know, they're going to have like, you would see the WBA wants to leave Sturm as a super champion, Golovkin
right.
interim titleist, and sanction a fight between those two guys for its regular world title.
I know we got our other co-host with us, Ernie, Ernesto Gavion. What's up, brother?
What up?
What up, man?
What up,
ladies and gentlemen? The lovely and talented Ernie Gavion for your viewing pleasure. How are you, Ernie?
Wunderbar. I'm happy and content. Just real quick, I wanted to brush up on that bantamweight tournament. Yeah, I'm with Gabe. It's a shame it's in Mexico. I mean, essentially, you got one fighter who questionably has any type of Mexican audience, and that's Abner. How ironic, you got a Colombian and an African fighting in Mexico. This was a head scratcher. And then you got an Armenian getting it on with a Mexican American. Hey, it's a head scratcher. But I'm glad that they made the tournament regardless. It's a fun thing. It's a bunch of guys who are really think that they're the best. I mean, if you talk to each one of those guys, you talk to Ed Becco, he thought he got robbed against Yoni Perez. You talk to Yoni Perez, he clearly thinks he beat, you know, Abner Morris. Same with Abner. And Vic, oh God, Vic's ego thinks he could knock out welterweights, according to Vic. So this is a great tournament, and I for one am really hyped up about this. I'm
extremely hyped up with it, but I'm just concerned that whatever, I just don't get it. I mean, I'm going to be just flat out honest, man. I think that's the stupidest move they could have done is to take it to Mexico. Nothing against Mexico. My mother's from Mexico, you know, but who wants to go out to Mexico and travel for these fights right now?
Why
not put it in the Home Depot Center? Put it in the Home Depot.
Actually, I did talk to Yoni Perez's co-promoter in this in Thompson Boxing, and they all pretty much agreed that, you know, this was indeed a fight that really would have been a savory thing in an LA-based venue, because one, you got Abner, who's from the LA area; two, you've got Vic D'Artagnan, who's got a huge Armenian audience out here; and then you got Yoni Perez, who is based in L.A., you know, and it just seemed like a natural thing. Problem that happened with him is, you know, I was talking to Alex, and maybe I give you guys a little bit of insight. The problem that came up is that there was no venues at the date that they wanted, which was the 11th or the 18th. Then when it came down to it, the 18th really just didn't seem savory to them, simply because they didn't want to be the weekend before Christmas. You know, and it's exactly 7 days away from Christmas, so they knew that Saturday would be, you know, filled with a lot of people traveling, going their Christmas shopping, and really not focusing on the fight. So, I mean, I can see that aspect. There was no venue, and the date was bad, because, you know, for the one, you know, date that they would have, you know, but anywhere else but Mexico. I mean, you could have went to Texas, and it would have been well.
Yeah, you could have, exactly. You could have won in Texas, you know.
Bring in Panama Lewis.
Yeah, you could have got Billy Costello licensed, and he could have fought, you know. You could have had Lupe Pintor come back, and he would have been licensed, you know.
Yeah, Resto's looking to get a license in Texas as well.
Gabe, I heard, you know, you could get a license, too.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually thinking about getting just a sparring license, though. That's all I really want. Sporting life. Boxing is it the only sport that every week you go, wow, I've never seen that before? You know, it's every week it tops itself for how weird it can be.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we got Floyd freaking out last week, and we're still
Floyd's
talking about
down.
This week.
Floyd is melting down. You heard about the domestic abuse thing, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to hear about that. Yeah.
You didn't hear about this?
He's being, police are looking for him for allegedly abusing, I guess, one of his baby mamas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's I put it on Twitter.
Hey, you do know why he hit her, right?
Because she made weight?
No, because she didn't make sushi.
I heard she agreed to Olympic style testing.
Well, the only thing the police know is that she's definitely not in her prime, and she's not a southpaw.
I was telling what did I tweet to Steve? I wonder if Floyd and Leonard are doing their own version of OJ and AC Cowling in their own.
But you know, it's weird. Yeah, 50 Cent like tweeted about it and said, you know, apparently she's done this before. To be fair to Floyd, and maybe you know, it's too soon to be making jokes about.
That's what
they are, jokes. He's allowed to make jokes. We can't make jokes.
Hey, we make jokes about Manny and his steroid use. You know.
Yeah.
You know,
the one thing I'll say about my jokes versus his is mine are funny.
But
funny. Is that the difference between him and Ali? Is that he's just not funny?
I laugh.
I don't find any of his jokes, Poochie Owl and Little
Poochie
Yellow
Owl.
It's not funny. It's like a 5-year-old joke.
That's what made it so funny is that, you know, he can't even come up
at him, not
junior
at
high
thing.
You know?
I don't like laughing at him. Like, look at the guy being an idiot as opposed to, well, that's pretty witty. I mean, Ali cracks you up talking about George Foreman. I'm going to hit him so many times he's going to think I'm surrounded. You know, or that he's surrounded. I'm so fast I turn out the lights and get into bed before it gets dark. That's shit. That's funny.
Remember
the gorilla stuff was mean.
Yeah.
But
you know what?
At least he was signed to fight him.
Right.
Floyd's not a well-thought-out person. We all know that. His decisions aren't based on being well-thought-out. You know, and look at
this guy is an advisor. Look at his advisor, RJ. or Ray J, whatever his name is.
You know what? And he has a whole team to sit there and do his thinking for him. So I doubt that he has to think beyond, you know, which Gucci purse or man purse he's going to wear with driving his Gucci flavored Maybach. You know, I think that's the thinking that he does, the extent of his thinking for the day. Yeah, it's hard right now. All I can say right now, it's really hard being a Floyd fan right now.
You know what? All I know is that Chili needs to tell him there's no, you know, you can't be chasing waterfalls and all that, and you know. Should it be creeping? He needs some TLC right now.
What else are we talking about, fellas?
Well, if you don't tell me what I want to talk about. I want to talk about Ricky Burns versus Rocky Martinez, man. It was a great, great fight. I didn't get to watch it live, but I did catch the replay of it. A lot of people were posting up the fight. I thought it was fantastic. And I got to say, man, it definitely it's one of the fights we got to see a rematch.
You know what? I haven't seen it, but from all indications, I heard it was an epic fight and probably the fight of the year, which is in a down year could be understandable because, I mean, in actuality, we've only had three real solid candidates, maybe a fourth. You know, so I'm going to go look for it, you know, maybe actually right now since I'm doing it via my phone and not through Skype. I think I'll go look for it and watch it while we talk.
I tell you right now, man.
Ernie, if we attach you on our Skype chat, I'll give you a link.
Are we Skyping?
No.
Well, we have the Skype chat up, and actually we can add you to it. I actually sent that to Dave. I don't know if he saw it. But if you have the Skype chat up, we can add you, and we can just chat through this while we do this on our phones. That way, you know, nothing drops.
Oh, thank you, fuckhead.
Well, there you go. I just crashed my computer trying to Ustream this, but my Skype's still working.
Let me ask you this, Gabe. Since you did watch it, you know, watch the fight, do you think Rocky has kind of made himself known that he likes to go over, you know, to the other side? He goes over to the pond and he likes to fight there. It's not the first time he's done it. He's been over there in the UK and fought. And the last time he was there, it was under, I believe, the David Hay and Malou fight. I can't remember correctly. It was on the card of some card out there for Sky, but for the Frank Warren. the last time he was out there, it looked like he gassed out. It looked like that the jet lag kicked in. This time around, it almost looked like it did. It didn't seem like he was exhausted, but it seemed like he was being conservative with his punches, you know, where Ricky Burns was able to just keep it at his pace, was able to tee off of him when he was on the ropes, you know, and just looked like Rocky was more concerned of keeping energy to try to go the distance and maybe catch him, because he would go at spurts and catch Ricky Burns when he decided to be aggressive. But it was Ricky Burns that just seemed to have the better boxing skills, which we all knew that he was going to have. And it seemed like, you know, he knew exactly just to keep punches on him, to keep him off, to make sure that he didn't return those heavy shots.
Yeah, it was like he reminded me a lot of Winky Wright, you know, in that he just stayed busy. You know, he's not a guy with a lot of power, so he's just, but the punches are straight, and they keep you busy. It's like you're hitting into the other guy's guard and making him never be able to set. And then after a while, you start to get through with those shots. And I think it was after the end of the second or end of the third, Burns landed, he had his back to the ropes, and
right.
Martinez is kind of methodical. You know, he's going to throw half of what you do, but when it lands, it's going to hurt you, and that's what he's looking to do. But he made the mistake of throwing three left hooks in a row, same timing, to the body of Burns. And Burns found the right uppercut and lit him up with it right at the bell. And from then on, he started using the uppercut, realized it was there, and then started, you know, opening up to the body. I mean, it was an all-over diverse attack from Burns. And Rocky showed himself to be, a little bit one-dimensional in his attack. But then later in the fight, dude, I mean, this is what made it, to me, 5 and 7, those rounds were rounds of the year. But the end of the fight, when it was like probably 10, 11, 12, Martinez had nothing in the tank, dude. I don't know how he was able to finish the fight, but he still kept trying, and he showed depth of character coming forward, and Burns getting hurt, dropped in the first round, coming back. They both just showed such depth of character as fighters. To me, this is without question fight of the year. As we're going right now, it's just even more so than Calderon, because it was reversal. Calderon Segura, there was reversal of momentum. Both of them landed great shots, but one dude put it all together for one night. Nobody really thought Burns was going to win this fight. You know, when he got dropped, they were like, oh well, you know, here we go, he got dropped. And here you go. You know, the guy comes back and wins. It was just awesome, dude. What a great fight.
It was, I always liked Rocky. You know, I know a lot of people, you know, really honestly kind of shade him off just because of the fact of his boxing skills was not up to par. He wasn't one of those Puerto Rican fighters where you're like, oh, he's got great amateur background, great boxing skills. You know, a guy's going to come out, he's going to outbox him. He can brawl, he can do both things. Kind of like like Miguel Cotto. He wasn't like that. He was a guy that really honestly just kind of laid it on the line. Every fight he got on made you wonder, is this his time to end? And a lot of us didn't think it was going to be with Ricky Burns, because the fact that Ricky Burns is not one of those heavy, heavy punchers. We knew he was more of a boxer. But you know, Rocky's he's been in that position so many times. And this time around, it finally backfired. That aggression that he had no defense. He was getting caught a lot of times, you know. And a lot of those shots were arm punches. It wasn't really big, heavy punches, but Burns did. You know, when Burns wanted to make him humble, for walking in, he did it, you know. Rocky just now, you know, it wasn't like, I mean, he was like in an urgency through the whole fight, from round one all the way down, you know what I mean? There was no other pace. There was no, let me break him down, let me chop him up a little bit. It was just urgency. I dropped him early, I can drop him again. Let me go after him, and let me catch him. And I think that's what happened. His mindset was, I can hurt this guy. I can get him out of there. Rather than going back and what he did in the beginning, which was really just throw punches to set him up, he just got into that puncher mind frame. And I think that's what ruined him. I think that's what really honestly screwed him up. But fight of the year, it's definitely a candidate. It's up there with Calderon and Segura. It was a great fight. I nominate both of them. I say make them both fight of the year. Both fights, in my opinion, belong in having rematches.
Escalante fight, too. Was that the one you were going to just say? I'm sorry, Ernie.
No, I was just going to say that I smell a Puerto Rican-based pay-per-view where the rematches of Burns and Martinez and Calderon and Segura just would go through the roof.
Oh, yeah.
I should be a promoter, dude.
Definitely a matchmaker. That's a,
yeah, because that was
in charge of the pay-per-views, you know? That's pay-per-view, but think that's the undercard of something spectacular.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was not well, the Escalante fight was also, not this last one, but the one right before was also a Fight of the Year candidate.
Yeah, Escalante-Roman.
Yeah, that fight. That actually might be Fight of the Year still.
Yeah.
Just because of the ending. You know, it's more decisive.
Yeah, that was just exciting. And it was, I think, the rivalry angle between those two guys. You know, both being from the same area, both growing up in the same basic, you know, boxing program, and having bad blood towards each other. I think, you know, I still probably edge it. I'm watching the Martinez-Burns fight as we speak. Looks like they just started going at it from round one, it looks like.
Yeah. I think that actually the Roman Escalante fight is the first rematch street fight, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Which is kind of a trip. You know, they fought the amateurs, but, like, you know, on the street, you know.
Yeah.
And then the fight itself was a street fight, you know. This is kind of funny to me.
Yeah, I still would probably edge that one over Calderon Segura, simply because I think Calderon Segura, you could see the momentum really just shifting. And to me, it was, you know, whether or not Calderon could withstand Segura enough to keep on his feet. You know, other than that, the drama was already kind of there. You could see clearly that, you know, Calderon was kind of wilting a little bit. You just wanted to see if he could withstand it. But, you know, Roman Escalante from the opening bell was just rock 'em sock 'em robots pretty much. You know, and then there's a couple other fights. I mean, they're only four rounders, but the Valardes fight. I mean, Valadez fight and the Luna versus Luna fight on ESPN. Those two fights utterly amazed me and made me realize just how great our sport is.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what you need to do, Gabe, is tape all those fights right there and send them to Dana.
Seriously. Yeah, seriously, dude. Here you go, dude. Check these out. These are actually
here you
really
go,
good.
Brother.
This is 3 weeks in a row, by the way. Yeah, or actually not, you know, 2 weeks in a row. And then we got a fight this weekend, man, that is definitely a Fight of the Year candidate going in, you know, Anthony Peterson versus Brandon Bam Bam Rios. But that fight, I can't pick a winner. I mean, we're moments away from having both of them come on the show and talk to us. And
you
I'm not going to make my pick until I hear both of them talk.
You know what's funny, too, is that in a strange way, even though both kids are undefeated, both kids are on the rise, it's kind of a crossroads fight for both guys.
I mean, exactly.
Yeah, it's one of these guys. Okay, whatever happens to that winner, you know what? We're gonna escalate you to bigger and better status. And the loser, kind of got to start over again. You know, it's not necessarily a start over. If they do well, I think they'll fast track. I think Top Rank would definitely fast track them, but they still would have to do some kind of recovery about them. You know, and so it's exciting in that we have two prime guys fighting a crossroads fight, you know, something that we've been sorely lacking. I mean, you know, it's been good. We've had Pirog versus Jacobs, which was, to me, a crossroads fight between two rising stars. You know, but it's too far and in between. You know, Go ahead.
I would say, you know, because some fight fans are gonna be like, that's not a crossroads fight. I think what we're saying is that. Meaning the lack of being in the square circle, you know what I mean? Well, they're not being as active. They're not being as active.
Maybe we can call it a coming of age fight. Maybe we can call it that instead of a crossroads fight. But it's
right.
Two guys where the importance of this fight is just about equal between both. You know, whereas you get and it not being for a title and it not being, you know, celebrated as some big pay per view. It's actually nice to be able to see an important matchup like this for free, or essentially, if you're, you know, an HBO subscriber, for free, you know, I think it's important to see these types of fights, you know, with a regular basis. I mean, we don't get to see this very often, where both kids, you know, both are kids, both are in their prime, both, you know, both have as possible champs. You know, we don't get to see that very often, and it's rare, and I'm going to really utterly enjoy it, watching it on my TV.
I'll tell you what, another news, Danny Green and BJ Flores. BJ Flores is back. It's set for November 17th. Yeah, he's going to be fighting. He's back into the ring, and he's going to be facing Danny the Green Machine. That fight is set for November 17th.
Is he going to give us an analyst point of view between rounds?
Well, he better keep his eye on the ball, because Danny Green does have that punch. And they're going to – I don't – talk about a crossroad fight. That's definitely a crossroads fight for BJ Flores. Even though he hasn't lost yet, it's one of those fights where, are you sure you want to take a shot at Danny Green? Danny Green at this moment right now and this time in your career, don't you want to fight somebody just to get your blood working and your bones joined up a little bit to get some juice in there? But he doesn't want to do that. He wants to take on Green right now and see what Green is really all about. Was it a fluke what he did to Roy Jones Jr.? Was it a fluke to the man that he just jabbed and the guy fell apart? I don't know. We'll find out.
I don't think BJ has any choice, really. I think he has to take what's given to him.
Well, I hope he doesn't get blown away.
Is this fight happening at the Mirage?
I was thinking more... more of the Fantasy Springs Casino?
That's funny. It's like a fight. If the other one's not a crossroads fight, it's like a fight to see, where these guys are going to go, who's going to rise, and who's going to...
Well, this is the thing about BJ.
We want to see which one's the Mirage in this fight,
Right, right.
He hasn't fought, anybody, and Green's been fighting corpses. So, now we get to see, is it somewhere in the middle? We should call this fight Split the Difference.
Well, the thing about BJ Flores is that first he was a boxer, then he had announced at one time in his career, which was recent, he said, hey, I'm going to do MMA. That's what his talks were about. But now that he's getting the shot at Green, now he's back as a boxer and stuff. And I don't know how serious... the Green fans should really take this fight. I mean, we haven't seen Flores in a long time. I can't even think of the last time we saw him step into the ring and do anything. Honestly, to tell you, I don't remember. You guys remember?
No, I don't remember him ever fighting ever in the history of ever. I can't remember a fight that he's been in that I paid attention to.
In the history of ever.
That's the sad part about this. I mean, I have nothing against BJ, but this dude, I mean, you have 24 fights, and I doubt I've seen one. I don't know, dude.
Yeah, and the Danny Green is like, the most I've ever cared about him is that video of James Toney and him sparring where James Toney gets mad at him. Which is a classic, that's a classic.
Yeah.
That's about as much as I've ever cared.
That's about as big an ass kicking as I've ever seen. Oh, God. I mean, you could just see James toying with them, and, Danny holds his own until James gets pissed, and then it just turns it out. It's just, ugh.
The Roy Jones thing, we never really found out about those raps, what went wrong, what was going on with them going into the Roy Jones fight. And then, this last fight where dude was broke as hell. They looked like a fix. And the guy hadn't been fighting, was not medically cleared to fight. They had to get a different commission to get him in there. I mean, they might as well have, the ring walk should have been them rolling him in, with an orderly on a wheelchair. And then just bring him in, and then just plop him down. Call 10 and let's go. So we're going to see. I mean, I applaud BJ for taking on a name guy that could possibly be dangerous.
Right.
Good for him.
It is dangerous, yeah. He's more dangerous right now at the moment because he's been more active. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I give to Danny Green. He is more dangerous, and he is a heavy-handed guy. It's not like this is made up, what he did to Roy Jones Jr., we don't really know. Roy's chin is questionable, and Roy's getting back into the ring himself, But I want to go with...
And he busted out the pirate outfit again.
And he busted... Hey, we all have a little captain in us, Ernie.
He looks like a Prince backup singer. From the Purple Rain Tour.
He looks like Dave Chappelle playing Prince.
Yes. Oh man, I don't want to pay attention to Roy until Canastota. We'll say that.
When Roy knocks the guy out, is he gonna go, "Would you like some pancakes?"
You ever swim on the shores of Lake Titicaca?
Bitches.
Another news, Marcos Miedana. Marcos Miedana, man, fires back at Amir Khan and tells him to pretty much keep his nose out of his business because of the fact that Amir Khan. Yep. Because the fact that Amir Khan said, "Hey, that's too much money, so the fight is in jeopardy." Miedana saying, "Listen, just sign the contract. Let's get in there and fight. Stop worrying about how much Golden Boy's offering me or HBO. Let's fight." Yeah, I got to agree with them. Why is Amir Khan being in there in the mix of trying to act like he's, you know, Mr. Al Heyman or anybody else that's a manager? Why don't you just get in there and fight?
Well, you know what's interesting, though, is that go ahead, Ernie. Go ahead.
No. You go ahead. I'm gonna go.
Amir is like putting together a personality for himself and something of a persona, and he's kind of chosen to be a little bit of a bad guy, you know. And he's poking at him and talking about his money. I'm curious why he knows how much money is offered by Donna. I guess he's that involved with his own negotiations, which maybe more fighters should be, but. It is kind of weird. I mean, Amir hasn't really done a whole hell of a lot. He's picked up some belts. He hasn't cleaned out a division. He hasn't taken on a dangerous opponent that could knock him out other than the guy that knocked him out. So, you know, just sign the contract and let's just see the damn fight. I pick Amir to win, but the way he's been weird about it, it is kind of annoying. But I think a lot of it is just him trying to be in the press and drum up some action.
Well, that's the funny thing about it. You know, if you follow his Twitter account, he's sitting there saying that he's willing to fight on everybody. He's willing to take on Maidana. Yes, I want Maidana. Tell your guys to call my guys and let's get it done. Then a couple tweets later, he's saying, well, Maidana's pricing himself out. Well, dude, I thought you wanted to fight him. What do you care what he makes? You know, why do you care so much about what? I thought you just wanted to fight him. I thought you just wanted to fight the best. Why in the world do you care about what your opponent makes? It's not. It shouldn't be about that. Worry about your own money. Don't worry about your neighbor's money, man.
Exactly.
Maybe he's just worried that, you know, this going to $500,000 is just going to go missing. So he's just accounting for it.
Well, you know what? You know what, Gabe? You said, you know, some fighters should be honestly keep an eye on what's being on the table. But do we really want that? I mean, should fighters hear what the other guy's going to make? I mean, that to me, honestly, has ruined our sport in some ways, where fighters now know what the other guy's going to be receiving. Fighters know more or less now what they're worth. I think that kind of blankets them saying, you know what, I don't want to do it right now. I'm going to wait because I don't want to get a blemish on my record at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's just concerned about the money. And you think about these two guys, they are two guys that bring a gate. They're kind of a rare commodity. You know, Maidana just had 11,000 people. Khan did very well in Madison Square Garden. He does very well overseas, although the tide is turning against him a little bit until he fights a guy like Maidana. But if he did, wherever he does it, you know, if it's in England or if it's in South America or even here, there's three, you know, that's three venues that he can fill up. With the Maidana, so I don't see why not take this fight. It is kind of odd that he's talking about it, but you know, I don't know about you guys. I actually didn't see the story where Khan was talking about his money. I just saw the story where Maidana was mad about it.
No, in his Twitter account, what he was saying was that I'm willing to take on everybody. I'm willing to fight the best, Maidana. I want him. I tell Maidana to call my people. He even put the number of his manager on there. Tell him to call me. He knows where he can find me. Then all of a sudden he says, Maidana's pricing himself out. Maidana wants too much money. You know what, dude? As long as your money's straight, don't care about what the other guy makes. You know, you shouldn't worry about splits or whatever. You know, you shouldn't worry about that. What you should worry about is what you make and whether or not this guy wants to get it on. If those things happen, don't worry about it.
So I think them knowing what they're going to make and and what's being put on the table and what's the offer. I think now, really honestly, you know, HBO or Showtime or any of these promoters, they really need to look at it and go, do we really, should we really honestly reveal what the other guy is making? Because, look, Amir Khan, you said it right. I mean, where, who has he really fought to be? He's no major draw at this point. I mean, he's got a great fan base, but he's not a guy where he can really honestly dictate who he's going to fight next and how much this should they make. Clean up your division. You know, put up or shut up already. Stop being on your Twitter. You know, that whole Twitter thing should be banned from fighters. You know, if you're a fighter and you're trying to have a patient on there, they should say, sorry, you can't. We can't tweet until you start fighting some fighters.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird. You get to kind of see what people think of themselves, how they view who they are. And, you know, you look at Berto, he thinks everybody loves him and that it's all good. And like, dude, you don't have a fight. You're the WBC welterweight champion. That's a historic belt.
You know what I think?
Great
you know,
people.
I'm starting
you know?
To think. I think if you get on Twitter, automatically jinxes your boxing career. I mean, because you don't get fights. look at some of the more popular, I won't say their name, fighters, but they haven't fought since their Twitter account blew up. You know, it's ridiculous. There's some ridiculous.
Or they lose. Yeah, Danny Jacobs. Paul Williams, Andre Durrell, Andre Berto, Floyd Mayweather. That's kind of weird. They're all out Heyman fighters.
Yeah, and one fighter we won't mention anymore.
Yeah. They're all out Heyman fighters, and they're not fighting. Well, actually, one of them is not an Al Heyman fighter. He's just dying to be, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's kind of weird. It's like the EA Sports jinx, but, yeah, the Twitter jinx.
Yeah,
come on here, never work again.
And you know what? You know what's even worse about this fight? You know, I personally think it's a cool fight. I think it's a good fight to have. But HBO is going to counter-program it against the Bantamweight tournament. You know, they're supposed to be both on the December 11th date. That sucks. I'm sorry. That really just sucks. It stop doing this. You know, if you're HBO, knock it off, dude. You know, you've got other dates. You got 52 weeks in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Your paltry HBO dates. Stop picking on Showtime. Just because Showtime's programming and matchmaking is better than yours doesn't mean that you can sit there and try to steal their thunder.
Oh, God, I know. You know, and it just eats me up, man, when that happens. You know, I don't understand why they do that. I mean, okay, we understand it's a competition, but talking about acting like a bunch of kindergartens, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
HBO is definitely in. Maybe that's why they got money on there with them. You know, I don't know. Maybe they told him. Maybe they gave Money Mayweather the jokes. you know, really quick. Really quick. Yeah, exactly. Really quick. You know, before we continue the show, I just want to say rest in peace, John Arum. Was 49 years old, who had just recently passed away. Our condolences go out to Bob Arum and his whole family and the Top Rank family for their loss. Going back into boxing, I want to hear everybody's thoughts about Klitschko, Vladimir Klitschko, talking about a KO, you know, saying that he's going to knock out Samuel Peters this time around. And, I mean, it could happen, but let's not forget he did get dropped three times in the process of trying to do it the first time they stepped into. But Samuel Peters is not the same guy when we saw the first time. I'm not really sure if Samuel Peters is, if his confidence build is up there at all.
From everything that I'm hearing out of Big Bear Lake, he's lighter than what he's been. I think he's in the low 230s again.
Mm-hmm.
Abel Sanchez has got him really working well with what he's got, and I'm actually kind of excited. Me and Gabe were talking about this, you know, a little while ago. We were texting each other, I think, yesterday, and he asked me if I think, you know, Peter has a genuine chance. I said, you know, maybe not genuine, but I think he's kind of almost a live dog there. I mean, there's one thing that Sam can do is crack. I mean, I don't think that's a question. I think he can crack.
Right.
And we all know that, you know, once you know, someone goes boom on Vlad's chin, he falls down. You know, it's one of those things. Is Vlad going to play it safe enough to where, you know, he's going to sink it out and make Sam Peter look bad and really play it safe? Or is Sam going to be, you know, strong enough Which I think he is. I think he's got that core torso that really can bully through a guy like Vlad, you know, and to bully through to try to get his shots off. And, you know, it's an interesting dynamic depending on what Peter has. And if Peter has enough and if Abel Sanchez has got him geared down enough to where he's really focused and motivated for this fight, it could be an interesting outcome. I'm almost to the point where I'm really contemplating picking Peter.
Well, I tell you what, Peters this time around cannot go with the same game plan that he did the first time. He's got to be a little bit more aggressive. He's got to take the fight to the much taller man against Klitschko. And he's really honestly, he's got to stop doing what everybody else has been doing, which is just trailing around and trying to land on the head. He needs to go to the body. Work that body, you know, do exactly what a lumberjack does. You chop down the trunk in order to get the tree to come down.
You know,
timber.
I think the thing is, though, you have to
look at it.
I'm writing the piece right now. That's why my thoughts aren't fully formed about Vladimir. And he kind of talks about why this fight's interesting, is that now you get to see side by side what changes, how they're different in 5 years. And you've really only seen Peter begin to change. He changed for the worse for a long time there, coming in at 265. Against Eddie Chambers, and now, you know, he's with Abel Sanchez since last May. They've had three fights. He's down to 237 in his last fight. The biggest change I see in him is he's using his jab more, and he understands range better. The footwork seems a little bit better, and conditioning, of course. But it's that range. He always needs to crowd himself, come in too close and too wild, or be at the end of your range and eating shots like he did with both Klitschko brothers. I think range is going to be key in this fight. If you can kind of keep mid-range so Vladimir can get full extension on punches and is trying to hold and can get caught on the chin trying to hold, then, you know, then he's got something. I'm with you, Ernie. I'm kind of leaning towards Peter on this one. On the next round, I picked Vladimir, but the more I dig and the more I look at this, the more I kind of think this is, one, a real fight, and one is a very winnable fight for Sam Peter.
Wow. I don't know. I'm going to have to keep going with this one just because of the fact of it's kind of – I got my other phone right next to me. Sorry about the echo, guys. But it's because of the fact that – just because of the fact that, you know, that whole jab and hold has been successful for him. So I'm going to have to go with Ladd. I think Ladd's going to be able to do exactly what he's been wanting to do. And make sure it keeps it up with him. It's going to put the weight on top of the neck of Samuel Peters. It's going to take out the legs of Samuel Peters because that's exactly what that tactic is there for, is to take out the legs of the smaller guy where it makes him not fall down to his knees. It makes the smaller guy, the stockier guy, push up, squat, which uses a lot of energy and stuff. But you know what? Before we continue, let's bring in our first guest, Bam Bam Brandon Ruiz. Are you on the line with us, brother?
Yes, I am. I'm right here.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, you know, just here in Las Vegas right now, just chilling. About to get a little light workout, and that'd be it for today.
So, man, this should be coming out party for you. You know, some questions about you right now is the inactivity, though, that's been surrounding you for some time. How are you feeling about this? Are the nerves built up? Are you feeling good? Do you feel there is no – ring rust has been shooken out in the gym? You're okay to get in the ring with Anthony Peterson, who is almost in similarities with you at this moment as well?
Well, I feel great, you know, ring rust is no effect on my part. I've been in the gym, you know, I've been training my ass off, so it's like the ring rust is not going to be affecting the fight, you know. I'm just real ready and prepared to go handle my business. Hello?
Yeah,
hey.
No.
Oh.
Hey, it's Ernie for Boxing Scene. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And yourself?
Good, bro. Hey. Do you think anything like, because you almost went through two camps now before you got a fight. You went through what you thought would be, you know, gearing up for the Anthony fight, and then that didn't happen, and then you started all over. Did you think that maybe, you know, there might be a tinge of maybe overtraining, or did you take enough rest in between the two camps to really just, you know, relax your muscles and not be, you know, basically, you know, turning a 8-week camp into like a 16-week camp.
Well, to be sure, I don't think there's any such thing of overtrain. That's where I come from. I don't think you can overtrain yourself. If you train yourself, you train yourself to prepare, and you'd be more prepared than ever, you know. I don't think I'm overtrained. I've been taking time off, you know, like I did. I did took like 2 or 3 weeks off when I pulled the fantasy on Iron Cut. I took two to three weeks off, and then, you know, came back in the gym, and then I felt like a new man again, you know. I felt like I was starting over another camp, getting ready for another fight. So when they told me this fight, you know, I was already in camp. I had tremendous sparring with Eder Perez and some local fighters around there. So overtraining and stuff like that, nah. And I'll be really prepared for this fight, and I'm going to show everybody who Bam Bam is.
Bam Bam, this is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing and Leave It in the Ring. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you.
It's our pleasure. I'm curious. This is like a fight of the year type fight. You're going to have to impose your will on this guy. You're going to have to, you know, try to get him out of there. It's a classic matchup of kind of boxer-puncher versus yourself, but I think it's more of like a pressure, kind of brawler-puncher type guy. How do you prepare yourself mentally knowing that you might have to go through hell on Saturday?
Well, I always prepare myself really well. You know, I'm always ready for a war. And all my fights, I say every fight I fought, I look at it this way. It's gonna be I'm gonna go to hell for that to come out to victory, and I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to trade punches. I'm willing to take a punch. I'm willing to get cut. I'm willing for everything. You know, I'm willing to do all this stuff just so I can get my guy so I can punch him. You know, I'm willing for that, and I'm ready, like 100% ready. You don't understand how much I'm ready for this fight, man. I've been in the gym. My preparation is very, 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 very good. So you know what? It's gonna be, it should be fight of the year. You know, it could be the show stealer. We might steal the show that night. Because Anthony Peterson is no joke. I consider him one of the top, maybe one of the top, but one of the best lightweight out there right now as a young prospect. And we're gonna prove everybody wrong that night. I'm gonna show everybody who Bam Bam is. Like I said once, I'm going to prove it.
Hey, Brandon, let me ask you, you know, is that, do you feel that in this fight here, you got to test your chin going against Anthony Peterson just because the fact that a lot of people consider him a pretty big puncher, much more of a bigger puncher than his brother. Do you and your camp feel, okay, this is a testament here. How good is your chin?
Well, my chin has been tested already. I have been hit by some pretty solid fighters. Oscar Mesa, he was a solid fighter. He hit very hard. He hit me in my chin. He tested my chin. Ricardo Dominguez, I did 10 rounds with him in Aguas Calientes. He's another fighter that hits pretty hard. And, you know, I have had my chin tested. And we don't think that my chin needs to be tested. We've really shown that I can take a punch and I can give a punch. And other than that, you know, Anthony, yeah, he's a big puncher. But, you know, the fight I've seen, he doesn't look that big of a puncher that everybody's thinking he is, because he can't take out some of these old veteran fighters out, but he should have knocked them out, and he couldn't. So, you know, I don't see that any kind of worries. All I'm, you know, the only worries we have is just the quickness, which we've been very prepared for that, and his quickness and the over right hand and just his movement. That's it. Other than that, we're ready for anything.
So do you got to test his chin? Is that what you're thinking? Are you going to test? Are you planning to test his chin?
I think I'll be the first guy to test his chin to see if he has a chin. I'll be the first guy that he ever is going to fight some, like, in the category like I am. You know, I punch hard. I'm aggressive, always aggressive, you know. And some of the guys he fought, yeah, they're aggressive one or two, but they're old veterans. And he takes him, you know, and he can't knock him out. So, you know what? I think I'm going to test. I'll be the guy to test his chin and see, hopefully make a good upset.
This is Gabe again. I think that is a huge difference between you guys. He's kind of toiled the last few years. His development hasn't come full circle. And for you, tell me if you agree with this. You kind of grew up in the Jorge Teran fight, then coming into that camp and then coming into that fight and blowing out a guy that not a lot of people thought you were going to blow out. I thought you were going to win, but not like that.
Right. Well, you know, it has to do with the lifestyle you're living in. You know, I grew up before I was immature, but I grew up now, you know. I just got married recently Saturday, and she's a very supportive in my career, and she also helped me grow up. Not only that, my coach Robert helped me grow up. So you know what? I have good people around me that's helping me grow up and become more of a man, and also become more of a one of those, you know, a fighter that's something I love to do. So he's just changing me more and more and more. And so I just developed maturity more.
Hey, Bam Bam, let me ask you this. What kind of influence has not just Robert Garcia, but having Antonio Margarito in your camp now for you know, at least the better part of the year, what kind of influence has he shown you? And also let's add Robert to the mix too.
Well, the input that Margarito has shown me is that, man, the way he trains, he trains like he's never been a champ before. He's a beast in the gym. And you know what? And I seen that, and it just motivated me more, because if this guy's doing it, he's like a three-time world champion, and he's training like he's fighting for his belt the first time, man, I should be doing that. And so lately, since he's been in the gym, my focus and everything has turned around. I've been training like no other. I haven't been a champion, you know. I don't consider myself a champion. I don't nothing like that until I have that belt around my waist. But right now, you know, I've been training so tremendous, like crazy, and it's a blessing, you know, to have something like that in the gym to show me what I need to do. Because I remember one day when he first came in the gym, you know, I sparred with him. He's a huge guy. He was a huge guy. I sparred with him. And he told me, Brandon, me and you, we're going to become champions the same day. And I was like, damn, man, if he's telling me that, I can become a champion like the same day he does. Dude, that tells a lot that I have a gift. And I've been doing very well. Not only that, it's my coach, Robert. He's the one that's making me like this. You know, he's the one that's training me. He's the one in the gym preparing me. He's watching my mistakes. He corrects my mistakes. He does everything. Not only that, you know, I still have other two assistants. Well, actually, one assistant, so he helps me out a lot. And then my strength and conditioning, you know, he works some sit-ups and everything. I get my body prepared. His name is Blue. So, you know, we have a good camp around us, and, you know, good people and good trainers. So it's just been a blessing for me to have somebody like that in the ring and in the gym, actually. So I'm ready and prepared because of him. And he's also going to be there Saturday to support me, because I'm going to go to his fight when he fights Manny Pacquiao. When he defeats Pacquiao, I'm going to be there. And when I defeat Peterson, he's going to be here with me.
Yep. The one thing that you touched upon that you kind of suggested is a maturity with you. Describe that. You know, I read the story on Max Boxing about how you've matured, how marriage has kind of settled you down. But does it really bring a new focus to you that you've never seen before, that you sit there and say, you know what, all this time here I could have been really bearing down and focusing, and now here's what it is to really be mature and concentrating on my career?
Yeah, actually it has, you know. I've always been like a, you know, a little kid, always in and out of trouble, you know, messing up my life, messing up everything, you know. I kept hearing Robert's voice. Like I said, Robert's the one that helped me out through the situation. I kept hearing his voice, you know. You're never going to be nothing. Your career's going to end quick, and you're never going to do nothing. You're not going to be like we had Steven Llewellyn and Brian Vellore at the time. And there was champion. He goes, you're never going to be like them, because you can be better than them, and I know you can, but you're going to waste your talent, your career, everything's going to go downhill from there. And you know what? I appreciate Robert for sticking by me and being a good friend and helping me through the scene, you know, telling me and always telling me, get on me. And not only that, you know, he's the one that introduced me to my wife. So he introduced me to my wife and everything, and it was like, you know, ever since the first time I met her, you know, we had a connection right away. She loves boxing. She loves boxing, and she loves what I do, so she helped me out a lot. She's on me, about my weight, my food, everything. If I'm overweight, she's on me, man. I'm telling you, she's like a hawk seeing a rat from above, man. It's crazy, awesome. You know. Yeah, sometimes I get a little upset with her, but you know what? She's doing it for the best for me. She's telling me all the time, I don't do it for me. I'm doing it for you because I love what you do and I want you to be successful in your career. So she's
24/7.
And Robert always, you know, she always told Robert, hey, after the gym, weigh him and text me his weight. And if you go away, I got to cut off this, I got to cut off that. So, you know, sometimes I get moody, but you know what? She's doing it for the best. And you know what? I love her for that, you know, and everything. Not only that, we're going to have a child, too, so it's pretty awesome.
Congratulations. That's awesome,
Thank
man.
Thank you very much. But the maturity, since I've been married and have my life different and everything, I think I grew up more. I grew up to be more of a man now because I never used to save up money. I used to be always fucking – I used to be a bum, to tell you the truth, man. I used to be a little vessel, you know. Fucking, I can't, you know, I used to do all that stuff, you know. But now I've been saving money for a house, so it's been going great right now.
That's great, fun. Brother.
So you went from wham bam, thank you, ma'am, Rios to just bam bam Rios, back to business.
Bam bam Rios, back to business again. You know, last time I stepped back in the ring, I've been anxious and I've been waiting to get in the ring 6 months. I love the fight, and I'm glad to get back in the ring again.
Have you ever dealt with a guy with speed like this? And with kind of, he's got a pretty full game. You know, he's inexperienced as he is compared to you. He's a well-rounded fighter and a dangerous guy. Is there anybody in your experience that kind of matches up with him that you can kind of take into this fight?
Well, I could say when I fought Ricardo Dominguez, my first 10-rounder, when I fought with Alex Calientes, he wasn't as fast as Peterson, but his counter punches, his movement, he was really sharp. He was a sharp shooter, you know. He cut me early in the third round. He cut me. But you know what? I didn't let him handle my will. I brought my will to him, and I kept doing what I do. And other than the quickness, no. But in sparring, like I said, I was sparring with a guy named Eloy Perez, who is from Salina. He's a very quick little guy. And, you know, he helped me out tremendous. And you know what? I actually kept up good with it, and I handled it pretty well. And he loved my sparring, and I loved his sparring. So, you know what? We did a good job. And, and also we had another guy named Paul Mendez. You know, he's a very quick fighter, too, and I handled him pretty well, too. Quick, and he moved a lot, and he had good movement, and I handled him pretty well. So, you know what? There's nothing that I'm not ready for. I'm ready for anything that he's going to bring to that ring Saturday.
Well, let me ask you this. What are the flaws in Anthony Peterson that you have kind of focused on? I mean, have you seen? And what do you think is probably the best part of his arsenal that you have to worry about and be cautious on Saturday night?
Mostly cautious we got to worry about is that right overhand. That's all we got to worry about, the right overhand. Once in a while, he throws a hook, but the right overhand, that's one we've been practicing on, and we've been working on that a lot. So we're going to be cautious about that. Not only that, but, you know, we just got to be cautious, period, you know. But mainly the hand, but we just got to be cautious, period. We just got to watch out for every little thing. We don't want to make a mistake, and I don't want to have to end up paying it because fuck that, because I won't end up paying it. I'm going to be going. I'm going to go forward. So we've just been working on that, and it's been working pretty well, too.
So, in other words, are you pretty much saying he's just a one-handed fighter? So that's why you only got to worry about that one punch?
Yeah, to me, you know, he's not a one-handed fighter, but he just got that one-hand punch. But that's what I see. He's quick. He throws a lot. He got a good jab. His jab is very well. But, you know, to me, he mainly focuses on that one hand. He mainly tried to knock out his opponents, and he never succeeds. And so, you know, that's only – he's not a one-hand fighter, but – mainly the hand, we've been practicing avoiding it because that's what he likes to throw when he gets you after his jab. Jab, jab, a boom, he'll throw that right hand. So, you know, we've been practicing on that. But other than that, you know, like I said, we're ready for anything and just be cautious for everything.
Now, being on HBO, it's a big stage. Is this your coming out party? Do you feel that this is the time for you to shine, to really show the boxing world, hey, this is who I am. You need me back. You need me more and more on HBO, a guy that likes to fight, not a guy that likes to pick fights.
Yeah, Oh yeah, man. This is my shine. This is my party time. This is the time to come out to show everybody from the United States that, man, where we've been hiding this guy. How come we haven't been seen him? How come we haven't heard of him? If people never heard of me. So, you know, this is my time to show HBO and show everybody else, you know, Brandon Rios, Bam Bam, is a good fighter. He's an aggressive fighter. He likes to come forward. He likes to get hit to give hits. And, you know, and people love that. People love those type of fight. People love somebody that don't get on their bicycle and run around all night long, like a Victor Ortiz. He run around on his bike all night long. So, you know,
you know what? I was going to touch upon that a little bit, but since you did, go right ahead.
Hey, I'll say it out. You know, I'm just real. You know, I'm real. And, you know, people don't like that. You know, people run around on the bike, you know. People like to see people going at it. This is a boxing. This is like a man's competition. You know, it's like a tough man. They see who takes the first hard punch and go down first. So people love that. And you know what? And I think people are going to be very pleased when they see me fight on HBO for the first time. And when they see my performance, they're going to be like, wow. Even HBO is going to be like, we want this guy again. You know, he's like another Arturo Gatti. He's like a Barrera. He's like a Marquez. He's like a Morales. He's like a Corrales. He's like all of them, man. We want this guy to come back again. So it's going to be very interesting to see that.
And you got a shiny new outfit to go along with it.
I can't hear you. What happened?
And you got a shiny new outfit to go along with it.
And I got a thing to go along with it?
A shiny new outfit.
That thanks to you, and it's going to be a beautiful outfit, you know. The Everlast, you know, they're always hooking me up. They're always giving me a thing. So very pleased for Everlast for giving me the outfit and, you know, and the gloves and everything they always done. So I'm very pleased for Everlast. Thank them very much.
All right, brother. Hey, Bam Bam, thank you very much again, brother, for coming on, leaving in the ring. Greatly appreciate it. I love the Victor Ortiz comment, man. That was talk about keeping it real, brother.
it's like saying, you know, man, forget about your little life story, man. You trying to make everybody fall in love with you. Dude, I know this guy. I grew up with this guy. His life story is full of baloney. His life story tells you about it. His parents left him. Man, that's all baloney. I can call his dad right now and tell him what the real story is. My dad would tell him the same thing. You know, he's a baloney phony and everything. He used to come out aggressive, and when he got his ass handed to him by Madonna, he ran like a little girl. Now, ever since then, he's running. So I want Virus Harris, the Virus Vicious Harris, whatever his freaking name is, I want him to knock him out and make him run again. Which he's going to do anyway. So there's nothing new that anybody's seen before.
Wow.
If he wants to meet 138, I'll go to 138. He comes out 138, and we'll meet. I'll hand it to him. He will never take the fight. I guarantee it.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
All right.
Wow.
Hey, well, let's set it out there, man. Let's set that up. 138.
Well, 138. Set it out there, man. If you set it out there, it'd be great. You know, I'm not running or nothing like that. I've never run from a nobody. And he's a nobody. He's just a little crybaby storyteller. There you go. Storyteller.
Wow.
Hey, Bam Bam. Hey, Bam Bam. Real quick, man. Let me ask you this really quick, man, before you go and stuff. Hey, dog, on the real, though, how do you really feel about Victor Ortiz? Yeah.
Pretty, you know, if I could cuss so much on this, like, this interview, because I know it's on radio.
Go ahead, man.
No, dude, we're on the internet, dude. I've dropped a bunch of F-bombs.
You know how I thought about that motherfucker? Man, fuck that fucking titty baby, crying piece of shit motherfucker. The little fucking, with the little toe behind his asshole, ready to go in. He's fucking a faggot. He's a fucking pussy. That's what I really feel about him. And he never, and I'll talk to his face, he's a fucking pussy, and he will never say shit about it. He'll fucking put his head down and try to shake my hand and be my friend still. He's a little bitch. That's what I think about that. That's what I think about him, and I'll always think about that about him. He's a fucking pussy.
Hey, Brandon.
Oh, wow.
Hey, I got whatever goes down on Saturday night, we got to have you back on Thursday, man, again, you know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, whatever goes down, you know. But look for a nice victory for my side, though. That's what I'm looking for and concentrating on. But definitely excited we can get back up again. And if you still want to hear his little story about Victor Ortiz, him and his little fucking fantasy world, I'll tell you, him and his little brother, Temo, fuck both of them. The pussy. Fuck De La Hoya. Fuck all of them. Fuck his promotion. His promotion ain't shit. Stop putting shit in his ass.
Man, you're a breath of fresh air, brother. You know, I got to say right now. He's talking about keeping it Chicano all the way, all Mexicano.
Right now, bro.
Wow.
Fuck that. Fuck, keep it real. Fuck that.
Wow. We have to make you a co-host, Brandon.
Yes. Honorary co-host.
Oh, yeah, and if you ever interview Victor, tell him, hey, go surf again, you fucking pussy. Only fag surf. He's a boxer. He's a fucking surfer. He's a little fucking pussy. Want to be punk rocker, preppy, white piece of shit motherfucker. Think he's hard and, all this shit. Man, he ain't shit. He's a pussy. He's a fucking surfer.
Hey, Brad. All I want to know, man, are we going to see the exact same aggression and F-bombs on Saturday night against Anthony Peterson?
Dude, what you see right now, what you're hearing, I'm like that 24-7. Saturday night, I'll be like that the same way. In the locker room, after the locker room, fucking when I go eat. Well, actually, Friday after weighing, shit, I'll be like this again right now, you know. I'm still a little bit sucking up, you know, I'm sucked up, make waiting right now, but fuck that. After I eat, you're going to see Brandon Reels alive, and Brandon Reels even more. This is just half of it. You haven't met the real Brandon Reels yet. And wait till you meet me, then you'll be like, God damn, this motherfucker needs to go back on a diet.
Oh, man. Hey, for anybody just tuning in right now, you're listening to the Bam Bam. Oh, boy's going to be fighting Saturday night on HBO against Anthony Peterson. Raw cut. Hey, Bam Bam, thank you again, brother, for coming on with us and speaking to us, dude, on Leave It in the Ring, brother.
Hey, thank you, guys, and everything. God bless, and thanks for having me on your show and everything. And like I said, when you interview Victor, tell him a fucking little surfer fag to get the ball.
I will, brother. Definitely. Hey, man, you made my day, bro. I just gotta let you know right now, you made my day.
I'll make your day again. Him and his fake fantasy. I'm telling you, fantasy life.
Hey, make my day on Saturday, brother.
Yes, sir. I will definitely do that. You know, I'm ready and everything. And like I said, just thank you guys for having me. And all I want to say over there to my fans in Oxnard, if they're hearing this, and everybody in California, hey, thank you all for the support. And Oxnard, you know, at the gym, at the Robert Garcia Academy gym, everybody there in the gym, thank you guys and everything for supporting and always being on my side and always been there for me, too. And I'd like to thank my wife for being there and Robert and my coaches, you know. Thank everybody for just being there and having, always had, never doubted me for one bit. And I thank that. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you again.
Take care, champ.
All right, thank you, guys. All right, bye-bye.
Thank you.
You know, Ernie, you told me, I thought this was going to be a good interview, Ernie. This was not even, you know, not even close to being good. This shit was great.
I like that. You know what? It was funny because on Skype, I was going to sit there and say someone asked him about Ortiz. And the moment that he did that little quip, I was like, oh, he's going to go off. Dude, there's some stories that he's told me that Robert Garcia's told me. That you won't believe, dude. One day over a beer, I'll share them all. But it's pretty deep. And the hatred there between Bam Bam and Vic is legit. I'll tell you a little story. We did his outfit for this fight. That's why I asked him if he had a new outfit. Well, we were texting each other about exactly what he wanted for the outfit. So I'm texting him, he's telling me put Bam Bam here, put Brandon here, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, I get it all settled and done. And so I texted back. I said, so you want Vicious on the front and Oxnard on the back? He goes, what? Fuck that. Fuck. He texts me back exactly like how he's talking right now. Fuck that. I'm never going to put that fucking Vicious bullshit on my trunk. You might as well just cancel my whole fucking outfit. Don't ever fucking put that. I was like, dude, I was kidding. He goes, oh, ha, 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 ha. Yeah, so the hatred is a legit thing. It's one of those things where where, you know, a lot of people talk, you know, we all see Mayorga talk, you know, about how much he hates his opponent, and then in the end he's kissing them and smoking cigarettes with them or whatnot. Brandon really hates Victor, man. It stems from both of them being in the same gym.
Hey, this all I got to say is that get that bottle of goddamn Ustream, man. And you know what? I got to take off my profile picture on my Facebook right now before homeboy hits me.
But you know what's so funny? Honestly, he's not only in the ring is he one of those unkept secrets, but also just in real life, he's one of those unkept secrets that not a lot of people know about. He's a great guy to deal with. He's funny as hell, always cracking jokes, always just an up guy. I mean, you know, people say, oh, man, he's cussing too much. He's foul-mouthed. The kid, that's just how he is. He's a little raw, but he's a real fun-loving kid. He gives it his all. He's real loyal. I mean, that's one thing that you can get from this interview if you want to get something out of it. Kid's intensely loyal, and I think the hatred that comes from you know, between him and Vic, I think stems from the what he perceives as a lack of loyalty between, you know, between him and the Garcias and everything that just went down. And, you know, this kid's a legitimate kid, man. He's one of those guys that it would be really easy to follow. I mean, if you really wanted to get into someone and he's, you know, turns out to be as successful, you know, as what we, you know, a lot of us think, he's really a guy that you can get behind.
Guys, I'm back. I'm here with the other half of the fight we've been talking about this whole time, Mr. Anthony Peterson. Anthony, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
How are you doing, brother? We've had your brother on a few times, Lamont, and now we get the pleasure of having you on. And we were speaking to Bam Bam a little bit about you, and he said he's going to take it to you. He says that, you know, your chin hasn't been tested yet, and he would definitely like to chin check it and make sure to see whether it's worthy enough to be with him. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, he haven't done his homework, actually, because his chin hasn't been checked. I see that he's been down to the body twice in his whole career. I haven't wobbled, stumbled, and I've been in there with a tough guy. I mean, but it don't even matter what happened in the past between the two, both of our careers. It matters what goes on come September 11th.
You know, a lot of people, including myself and my co-hosts, Gabriel Montoya and Ernesto Gavion, here on Leaving the Ring, and then a lot of fight fans, too, are talking about this fight and are thinking that this is a possible fight of the year. I mean, there's a lot of questions, though, kind of lingering above both you guys. You guys haven't been as active, so we're looking, a lot of us as fight fans, we're looking at it as a fight that's almost as equal, and being that you guys have a lot of proof in this match here on HBO.
Right. Like I said, it's like this. In the past, it don't really matter. You know what I mean? It matters what happens. I mean, either the two combatants can have a good night, bad night, so it don't matter. It can be perfect to that point and get to the ball and get to the dance and drop the ball. But I'm just sitting here telling you and the rest of the people around the world that's listening to me right now that I'm more than ready. You know what I mean? So it's not about me telling y'all that I'm ready, showing y'all that I'm ready. Come set to me 11 when that bell ring.
In terms of just level of opposition, is there or you know fighters that you face? Is there anything different about him besides his power?
No. Only thing that's different about him is he's undefeated. I fought undefeated guys before. Check my resume. You know what I'm saying? He never fought nobody that's undefeated. All the guys he fought that he had a draw with, a guy with a record that was, you know, was kind of on the shady side. But like I said, it don't really matter in the past, you know what I mean? Matter what we done in training camp, what we did on homework, and come September 11th, we definitely going to see.
Is there anything different that you've done in this camp as opposed to previous camps?
No, the same thing I prepared for Juan Garza, Ernesto Hernandez. A lot of them guys, you know, was just like him. Typical Mexican fighters come and bring the heat, like to throw uppercuts, body shots, overhands, and stuff like that. But I plan to move early and start walking them down about the 7th, 8th, 9th round. And he haven't even been past 10 yet.
I'm curious. Go for it, Ernie. Sorry about that.
Hey, Anthony, it's Ernie from Boxing Scene. How you doing?
How you doing?
Good, good. Hey, what have you and Barry specifically have been working on? Is there anything out of there that you know you think you can utilize against a Brandon Rios type?
Yeah, there's more jazz more than anything, and lateral movement. I checked all his fights. He only moved forward and backwards. I mean, he don't got no lateral movement at all. But he's a good inside fighter. But how he gonna hit something that's not there? I mean, at the same time, I'm gonna give him a chance to get it off because I'm gonna sit there with him several times throughout the night. You know what I mean? But it's gonna be a fight to remember, especially on my part.
Cool. Hey, one more question. When you were with Prize Fight, you had a really active schedule. We always saw you either on ESPN or somewhere fighting on the undercard of another fight. When you moved to Top Rank, everything seemed to slow down to a crawl. Do you think, you know, not necessarily suggesting that, you know, signing with Top Rank is a mistake or anything, but is it frustrating for you to witness all the inactivity when you and your brother Lamont were such an active part of what Prize Fight was doing?
But let me reassure you on something. It had nothing to do with Prize Fight or Top Rank. It was all Shelly Finkel. I mean, he was, it's no secret no more that he, you know, turning out fights behind our back, world championship fights behind our back. And we exposed him, you know what I mean? That's why really, the real reason I think why he left the game, because we really exposed him and the type of person he was. I mean, and it's no secret no more. Everybody knows that. I mean, Shelly held our career up because we couldn't get out of the contract. It took a minute to get out of the contract. We couldn't fight, you know what I mean? So we had to wait and wait and wait. Then we got with Top Rank. And after we got with Top Rank, you know, we've been fighting again.
That's good to hear. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's like I was there for the whole thing, so I know the true story. You know what I mean? And it was all Shelly Finkel.
Cool. It's good to hear that both promoters were behind you 100%, and it's just the bad part of your equation is now out of the picture, so you can focus solely on the fight.
Right.
I'm curious, you know, I asked this to Brandon. A lot of people are looking at this as a very fight of the year candidate type of fight, the kind of fight that you're going to have to go through some serious fire in order to win, very possibly. I mean, your style, you're more a boxer puncher to me, so in a lot of ways you can make it very easy for yourself. But how do you mentally prepare for that?
I could make this fight real boring and ugly. I can make this fight real boring. But I'm not that type of fighter, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can dance around Brandon Rios all night while him laying a glove on me, if I want to. But I'm the type of guy, I'm in boxing for contact reasons, financial reasons, and for history book reasons, you know what I mean? And I know me doing that is not gonna let me succeed that, you know what I mean? So I'm going to do what I got to do to be TV friendly, audience friendly, commentator friendly, whatever friendly that you can think of as far as contact and boxing.
You know, Anthony, Bam Bam said that the only concern, I mean, he said he's not taking you lightly at all. You know, he knows that you do carry power, but he said the overhand right is something, it's more or less that's the one punch that he has to worry about. What do you think? I mean, is there anything else in your arsenal? I've seen you fight, and I
have to worry about the overhand.
Yeah, he says the overhand right is the only punch that he'd really have to worry about.
Wow, and that's my weakest punch, really. He haven't been doing his homework then. Well, come Saturday night, September 11th, on HBO, I'm going to show the world that I'm the best lightweight in the world, and there's no way that he's going to take that away from me. Like I said at the press conference, I'm going Saturday night to die. You know what I mean? I know what type of animal I'm facing. You know what I mean? So at this point, I really don't care. You know what I mean? I've seen so many bad circumstances in my life. It's nothing that this guy can show me. He's just human, just like me.
Let me ask you this. You know, what is it about Brandon that you see about him as a threat, and what you see about him is not a threat? I mean, have you watched tapes about him? I mean, I know you did mention that.
I got him on my iPhone. I watch him every day. Got two fights in his last fight and his fight before Alvin Brown. Okay, you can say he had a good performance his last fight. We fought what's the guy named from Brooklyn?
Jorge Torres.
Right. You cannot compare him that type of animal to this type of animal. That guy was tall. He was he couldn't really box. He had no power. You know what I mean? He walked right through him. And I'm glad that he's saying that he's gonna walk through me and try to walk, because once he comes, you know what I mean, and feel his power and feel the awesome that I'm giving him, he's gonna be reluctant to punch. Like he just like, you know, a lot of fighters in my past, you know, coming up to the fight, said they was gonna do this, said they was gonna do that, said they had a, and it just worked out different when we get in the ring, because I'm a whole different type of caliber of fighter.
With just two fights in 2 years, though, how are you able to really measure yourself, your development as a fighter? I mean, is it just that you've been in the gyms, adding different tools, refining things?
In the gym, sparring variety of professional guys, Fernando Guerrero, Dominique Wade, my brother, Lamont Peterson, Ty Barnett, going to different gyms, getting different work. So we ready. You know what I mean? There's no excuse or no way that I'm going to lose this fight. You know what I mean? I know I'm human, I can be touched, and it's a Sunday punch, you know what I mean? But at the same time, our vision right now is just so focused and deep that definitely, you know what I mean, we're going to come out as victorious Saturday night.
Going back to what you said about, you know, being more TV-friendly and all that goes with that, don't you think this might be a dangerous guy to kind of change up a little bit? And I mean, you're going to do it in a safe way, I imagine, but don't you kind of want to keep it that you're the boxer and he's the fighter? Or, I mean, is it in a sense that you're trying to make up for all this kind of inactivity in one night, one exciting fight, and one big statement?
Oh, no, I would never do that. That's a mistake, you know what I mean? All I know how to do is win. All 30 mil, I never had a draw. I maybe lost, like, you can count on one hand how many rounds I lost in my professional career, you know what I mean? So all I know how to do is win. If I don't know, if you can say anything about me, with Anthony Peterson this, Anthony Peterson that, long as I come out with the victory, that's all that matters.
It was something that Brandon said. It was kind of saying you were going the distance with these fighters that aren't very good. But for yourself, you know, you went the distance with what? Fernando Trejo, Javier Haragi, and Luis Arceo. What do you take from those fights?
It's like I'm a type of guy that adapts to my environment. You mean? And I don't see why those opponents should have been in the ring with me, because it kind of lowered my like my sting for, you know, the hunger for boxing. Like, okay,
sure.
I'm coming off. If you check my resume, look at my resume, all the guys that I fought that was undefeated or only had one or two losses in a TKO or KO. Every time I fight somebody with a Montez Logan or a guy that like the Survivor, just, you know, come to the fight and just, you know, say they was dead, always go to decision. It always go that way. I don't know what's up with that, but.
That is a trip. I'm looking at your record, and it's like the better the competition, the shorter the fight.
Like, Brandon Rios gonna come in here. He gonna try to do what he do. I understand that, but at the same time, it's not gonna work. You know what I mean? Because he's the perfect caliber fighter that I need, because I can manipulate him. Because you ain't gotta look for him. I ain't gotta look for him. He's gonna be right there.
How do you see this fight playing out? Is it gotta be a knockout?
Yeah, about I say the late rounds, about the 10th or 11th.
Like a true or like a attrition, or just it's going to get stopped, or it's going to end.
Right, it's going to end. I see an accumulation of punches down the stretch, or one big punch knockout, because I see when he goes to the body, he don't keep his right hand up, which it don't matter what he if he hear me saying it now, there's nothing he can do, because your whole life you've been doing it. There's no way you can get that done in like 3 days. Come on now, like. But at the same time, I can't sit up there and tell you how the future going to go. Only thing I can tell you, it's September 11th. I'm ready. He better be ready in his own.
Anthony, you know, seeing what happened with your brother, which I thought he was in a great, sensational fight with Bradley. Is this, in some ways, do you feel that you have to heal up what has happened in your guys' story? Because your guys' boxing story is one of those touching stories where it does attract fans to want to tune in and root for you guys. Do you have to kind of patch up what has been done with your brother? You know, him going in with the complete wrong game plan against Timothy Bradley. Do you need to show out everybody, listen, the Petersons are still here, and I'm going to show you guys what it's all about.
Definitely. You know what I mean? Because it's like a couple of, you got fighters that lost before, you know what I mean, like a Marquez, but they come right back afterwards, you know what I mean, and get a big victory, and it's like they forget all about the losses. Like a Pacquiao. Pacquiao been stopped before. Pacquiao been hurt to the body before. But he put on so many sensational performances that they forget about that, you know what I mean? So definitely, absolutely.
So let me ask you this, because, you know, in general, when you have a set of brothers, there's always talk of one brother being better than the other. And Lamont was obviously the guy that most people talked about in terms of boxing skills. They would say, oh, Lamont Peterson, great boxing skills. Anthony Peterson got punching power. Seeing that that's what most people see you as and view you as, do you got to go out there with such a performance that people are going to be like, okay, maybe we were picking on the wrong Peterson. It's this Peterson that should have been the star. It's this Peterson that's going to be the star.
Well, it's up to them. All I'm going to do is go in there and do what I do best and come out with that victory, like I said. And if they decide that I'm the one in the Peterson that they, you know, that they got their eyes on, then so be it. I will never try to be in a race with my brother. I didn't get into this sport for that. You know what I mean? I know because we brothers, it's going to happen. So if it was like that, we might as well fight. I mean, so, and that'll never happen, so you can't compare.
Absolutely, brother. Well, you know what? I got to wish you all the luck for Saturday night. You know, hopefully you're victorious in that fight. I'm not really sure if my other co-hosts are done asking questions, but I got to say, man, you're all class, exactly like your trainer. And your brother, you know, I enjoy both guys when they've been on my show several times, as well as having you on, brother. You're all class act.
Oh, I appreciate it. And that let me know that I got a bigger goal than just boxing. I mean, anybody can go in there and keep punching each other, slip punches and do whatever. But I want to be a commentator and pretty much do what you guys are doing right now, host radio shows, ask the future fighters questions that I'm asking now. So I'm just prepping myself for that. You know what I'm saying? I never dreamed about being the greatest fighter ever lived. It's nothing that I'm going to do September 11th or my future fights that I'm going to show you that you ain't already seen before. You've seen Roy Jones. You've seen Floyd Mayweather. You've seen Ray Robinson. You've seen Ray Leonard. It's nothing that I can really show you that you haven't saw before. You know, so I just want to get in the history books and be among the elite. You know what I mean? The name, my name go against or beside some of the great fighters, but being the greatest fighter ever lived is far-fetched, and there's nothing that I'm chasing.
Absolutely.
Some new co-hosts in Brandon and Anthony for sure, man. These guys
absolutely.
They've knocked it out of the park.
Exactly, man. You know, man. And just like, you know, Anthony, just like your brother, man, you guys really honestly hold you guys' own when it comes to conversations and breaking down fights. I've always liked this. I enjoyed speaking to your brother and to your coach and stuff. And I got to say, very articulate. You guys, I think you're on your way, brother, becoming a commentator and stuff. I don't know if you want to be a radio host like us. We're not that good. We're all right.
y'all doing a pretty good damn job to me.
Well, thank you very much. thank you, brother. And you take care, man.
Thank you so much for taking it. Thanks so much for coming on the air and being with us, man. I really appreciate it. Good luck Saturday.
Yeah, good luck.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Too, brother.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, peace. God bless.
You know, now this made it even tougher, Matthew. Really, honestly, make my pick, but I'm gonna go with, you know, since Gable right now is on the wagon of not taking a cigarette and stuff. You know, he's been.
What are you talking about? I'm lighting up right now.
Are you lighting up right now, you bastard? You tell me you weren't gonna do it anymore. I'm gonna go with you really quick.
10 years.
Since you've been stone cold since the beginning of the show, you've been going at your rant. I'll continue. I know you right now. You're not gonna move from your pick. You're gonna stay solid. Go for it, brother. What's your pick for Saturday night between these two young men that are gonna be stepping in the ring?
This is the thing that drives me crazy about picking on the next round, dude. It's because I got to pick on Monday, and I don't always get to talk to the fighters before then. These guys, I'm gonna go with Peterson, dude. I agree with him. He's more versatile. If you look at it on paper, he's the kind of guy that should win this fight. He's got the speed. He's got power to set it up. He's got athleticism and arguably more tools. And then Brandon comes on and says, the only thing I'm worried about is what this guy calls his weakest punch. There, you know, that's going to be a big storyline right there. If he's looking for the right and it's the left, that's going to be a problem. I'm not going to go stoppage. I think it goes the distance in a classic. I think Peterson edges it out.
Ernie, what you got, brother? Do you agree with Gabriel over here, or you going to go against what he's got to say?
I think on paper, I think Gabe and Anthony are 100% right. I think there's just more tools that Anthony brings to the table that Brandon doesn't. But the one thing I'll say about this, the tools that Brandon brings to the ring are superior. He's got legitimate punching power, whereas Anthony may or may not have pure punching power. Brandon can flat out just crack. Everybody I've talked to, you know, who's ever been in the ring with him or who's ever sparred with this kid says, this kid hits like a junior middleweight. He just can flat out crack. His size, a lot of people aren't talking about this. His size is going to be a factor too. Brandon's a big lightweight. He's almost as tall as John Molina, and we all know how big John is. He's a tall, rangy, big lightweight that once he makes his weight, he bulks up. I mean, I saw him for the Quesada Areola fight. And he was still kind of sizable, and you could see that he was cutting down in weight, but you can just see the size that this kid has. And, you know, Peterson is kind of a small lightweight. He's not necessarily, you know, a huge kid. So, you know, I think the size is going to be a factor. You know, it depends. To me, I think I'm going to edge with Rios. I think a late stoppage is going to be about right. I see the experience of Brandon, and he does have a little bit of an edge in experience. I do think he's got, you know, one tool that can really erase all the talent in the world that Peterson has, and that's punching power. So I see a late stoppage. I see something along the lines of him grinding him down, and as the fight goes on, you know, Peterson's power decreases and diminishes, kind of provokes Brandon into, you know, taking more chances and taking more risks and actually putting Peterson in a position that we haven't seen before. So I'm going to pick Rios by late stoppage.
You know, this is the thing that I like about this fight, you know, and this is what matchmakers, whoever did this matchmaking, you got to give them their props. And the reason why I'm saying you got to give them their props is because the fact is this. They're putting in two guys that are equally in the same position at this moment. Meaning both guys have been not too active in the ring. Both guys got a lot of proof in the ring. Both guys got a lot of questions whether or not can they take a solid punch. I know both guys are going to be saying, no, I've taken that punch. I've done this and I've done that. But that's what makes this such a great matchup, and that's why so many fight fans are thinking, hey, we've had two candidates for Fight of the Year. We can have a three. It comes by threes, right? It comes by threes.
That's when people dying, dude.
No, it goes by everything. It goes by everything, Ernie. When you buy only one at the bar, at the Yard House, you end up buying three.
Yeah,
every time you go in there, you go, I'm only going to have one beer. That's it. Guess what? It ends up being three beers.
To you, it's like I said, you know, they don't serve virgin pina coladas for you, dog. So.
Well, what if you're Chris Areola?
Oh, you sell them by the keg.
Let me go back to what I was saying.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, Ernie. I agree with you, Dave. Yeah. It's very possible.
So when you get in terms of two guys, one guy that has really honestly been signatured as a big puncher, the other guy is more or less of a grinder. That's just a recipe of seeing a good fight. Now, it depends on what Anthony Peterson decides to do in this fight. I think Brandon, Bam Bam, his nickname already tells you what he plans to do when he gets into the ring, and that's Bam Bam against his opponent that's in front of him. Peterson, who has been groomed with his brother, who is the pure boxer, and his trainer, who also is more in mentality of, hey, box smart, not let's not play dumb, which is Barry Hunter. It can really reflect in whether or not we're going to see the same replica of what Lamont Peterson, his brother, has done against Timothy Bradley, which was go toe-to-toe. I'm not really sure if Barry Hunter wants to make the same mistake twice with another brother. I'm thinking he's going to want his man to box in the outside. I'm thinking that he's going to want the guy to be on his toes a little bit more, knowing that Bam Bam's going to come forward. And like Peterson said, hey, he's going to be there to hit. Why make the fight a little bit tougher? But egos do come into play, and we have very two prideful fighters. But my pick right now, I'm going to lean towards Peterson. I think that he's going to be able to stay maintained. I think he understands what's on the line. Bam Bam does understand what's on the line, but Bam Bam to me is more of a Mexicano that likes to come forward and is going to make sure he leaves it in the ring. Where Peterson is more like, hey, I'm going to get the win however I can get it.
One thing I think you know we haven't seen yet is a fully mature and professional Brandon, you know, up until this year. And now that we've seen it, you know, the results kind of speak for themselves. I mean, he's killing opponents that we thought would be tough fights. Oscar Meza was supposed to be a tough fight. He wiped Meza out. I mean, he obliterated that guy. Tehran was supposed to be a tough fight, you know, because of his power and his size, and he wiped him out. So I think, you know, it could be a harbinger of things to come. You know, it finally, Robert and Grandpa finally woke him up, you know, and he finally started really getting on the ball. Having, you know, I gotta agree. I think having a professional such as Margarito in the camp, you know, kind of inspired him a little bit because he said it himself. He sees a three-time champ working like he's got absolutely nothing. You know, who the fuck am I? You know, I haven't even gotten anywhere yet. And here I am trying to, you know, slack off. I better get on my game, too. So, I mean, you know, I think that's an intangible that we haven't seen yet. Have we seen 100%, you know, Brandon Bam Bam Rios yet? You know, maybe not. You know, and, you know, from what we've seen of Anthony, you know, he's kind of almost got one speed. You know, he's kind of almost got one dimension, even though he's, you know, a great boxer, and he does it really well. It's just it's that one dimension. And, you know, I still lean towards Brandon. I'm really impressed with Anthony. I'm a huge fan of both guys. I mean, just an absolute fan of both guys. But I'll edge Brandon a little bit because I think, you know, he's still a little bit on the uprise, and I'm not sure if Anthony's, you know, a little bit of a plateau.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's hard to say where he is because of those two, you know, it's like two fights in 2 years.
Yeah.
You got to figure there's got to be rust. There's going to be some issues with that. And plus growth. I mean, you know, sparring in the gym is one thing, but being active and being in fight to keep you sharp
is
a whole other animal. But, you know, in terms of skills, I mean, to me, what he's talking about, the tools and all that, I mean, I was always more into him than I was his brother. I always thought if you combined them, they'd be perfect, you know.
Yeah.
Great boxing skills mixed with power. And, you know, Anthony's a little more, he hasn't gone full Andre Durrell, and that he's just, you know, very, very athletic, but not quite a boxer. I think he has got some very solid skills and some good tools. This fight, that's the intangible. Who's going to be tougher? Who's going to want it more? Who's going to land first and more consistently? And I think the kind of fight that Peterson should make it, he should be able to win. But, you know, is his will going to hold up? Is it going to look like Margarito Cotto? You know, we'll see. Or, you know, or more probably appropriately, Chavez Sr. Against Meltzer Taylor.
Yeah.
Might look something like that.
Hey, guys, I'm going to interrupt you really, really quick because we got a guy that's been holding off for a minute. Benz, are you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing, man? Hey, Vince, you know, before, your last name, brother, because me and Gabriel were talking about it, and then we hear from somebody else.
Don't even try to say my last name, man.
tell me how to say your last name, dude, because I was asking Gabriel. I'm like, hey,
let me see if I can
do it. Martirosian.
Yeah, it's Martirosian.
Yeah, wow, that's pretty good.
Martirosian.
I've Vic Darchinian's one of my closest clients. I know all these Armenian names now.
Oh,
I love it.
Shut up, Ernie.
Yeah. Marterosian, right?
Marterosian. Yeah, you guys got it right. Yeah.
Hey, so right now what's in the news about you, brother, is that you said, hey, listen, J.C. Chavez Jr., you don't want to fight. You're complaining about going to Puerto Rico so you can work with Manny Pacquiao. You said, hey, I'm open to fight Miguel Cotto. I'm down to go up there and put the work in. So have they listened to you? Has Top Rank said, hey, I want to do that. Let's make that fight happen. I mean, you are within the Top Rank family, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the thing is that they're babying Chavez Jr., it looks like. But, you know, Chavez is coming along good in the gym. But, you know, I want to fight the best guys, and I'm doing my best, and I'm calling everybody out, and nobody wants to answer. You know, some people, you know, are saying, oh, you're not ready to do this. Okay, if I'm not ready, then, you know, it shouldn't be a problem for these champions to beat me then, right? But they don't want to fight. You know, I remember, you know, when, you know, 10 years ago when there were fights, everybody was willing to fight the best, but now everybody just wants to pick and go for the money fights, and that's not what I'm about. That's not why I get into the sport. I got in because I want to fight the best to see who the best is. I think that's what boxing should be about, not with, you know, people turning down money because the money's not right to fight this guy. Look, they should be happy that they're getting that much because they never saw that much money in their life. It's the first time. You know, I don't want to point fingers and say what I'm talking about, but people keep turning down offers and fight to fight people they don't want to fight. They don't have the guts to go on there and prove people that they're the best.
Now, let me ask you this. Since what you're saying is absolutely true, and I think that's where everybody's very frustrated in terms of promoters and networks and stuff, is because they're allowing these fighters not to fight each other and stuff. But since it's part of the mess that your promoter is doing, what do? Do you go and tell your promoter, listen, I don't want to be in that category. I want fight fans to say, oh, you know, man, all he does is want to pick his fights. He doesn't want to fight nobody. What can a fighter do? What can you really,
well,
what movement can
I
you
call,
make?
I call, you know, I talk to matchmakers from Top Rank, and I go, give me Chavez Jr. His answer to me is, hell no. I'm like, why? He goes, we already know you're going to kick his ass. I'm like, okay. All right, then give me somebody else, you know, because it's like, the promoters, you know, they're doing their job. You know, they're the ones who bring in the money. They put up the good fights. And, you know, my promoter, I have nothing but love for him. He puts on some great shows. Right now, the only promoter that I think is putting on great shows is Top Rank, is that they have Manny. They have a lot of fighters. And they could build, you know, they could put in a lot of fights together. But, you know, everybody's going after money and the money fights and this, that. And Pacquiao's a big name these days. And, you know, I never got in the ring with Pacquiao. And when I get to the Philippines, you know, I want to see how special he really is because, you know, you don't know how special he is until you get in there. And, you know, he's going to see how special I am, and I'm going to see how special he is when we fly.
Vaughn, this is Ernie from Boxing Scene. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Hey, did you think that the Joe Green fight, being on such a high-profile card as Cotto's fight in New York City, did you think that would propel you into the bigger and better fights? Because it seems like, you know, that would have been your coming out party, you know, much like the fights on
yeah.
Saturday.
Well, yeah, I know what you're saying about the Joe Green fight. I mean, the Joe Green fight was a good fight. The main thing about that fight, to be honest, I knew that I had Joe Green in the pocket. I know him from the amateurs. I know that I could have beat him. The main thing in that fight was just get the rounds in and try to, you know, work on some stuff that Freddie told me to work on. With the Uma fight, I got off track in the fight. I had a different game plan. My game plan didn't work, and, you know, I saw Uma's previous fight, and I looked at Uma like, okay, this guy sucks, and, you know, he's done, and I'm going to knock him out, and I prepared for Uma like that, with that mindset, and when I got in there, he gave me a hell of a fight. And so with the Joe Green fight, I wanted to be more serious about it, more focused in that fight, and, you know, to go in there and to do some of the things that Freddie tells me to do, I know I'm going to be Joe Green. I want to do the things that I could do when the time comes in the world title fight to work on with Joe Green, because the only time you learn is in the fight, and I was trying to learn some things in the fight. But overall, you know, there were some times where I tried to fight, but Joe Green, after he got hit with the right hand, his whole game plan changed from round one. He came at me aggressively. As soon as I landed a punch, he started running from me. So, you know, that kind of threw me off too. He was trying to survive. And when you watch the fight, he's always looking up at the top with the clock, and that's when he got knocked down, is when he was looking up at the clock, and that's what the, you know, what's his name, Jim, Jim from HBO was saying, you know, he looked at the clock and he got hit.
You know, when you're talking, when you, you know, speaking about Uma here, you know, a lot of fight fans felt that you lost that fight. And now he's got a fight coming up with Joey Gilbert in Reno. If he's successful in that fight, which I think all of us can say he is going to be successful against Joey Gilbert, and since you can't get anybody, would a rematch be relevant for you? I mean, since nobody wants to fight you, would you want to do that rematch?
Of course I would. I fight Joe Green. I mean, not Joe Green. I'm sorry. Kasim Uma again. I swear I'll knock him out because I have so much to prove. I have so much hate after that fight. And with the people, some people saying I won, some people saying I lost. I came home. I watched the fight. I thought I won. I thought I looked like crap, but I thought I won. And I'll say to myself, I didn't look good that fight. And I could do much better. And Freddie knows that because the reason is Freddie sees what I could do in the gym. And, you know, he's trying to get that into the fights, and that's what we're working on now. In the gym, I'm killing these guys. When it comes to fight time, I kind of got off track, but now I've learned to focus, and, you know, I'm basically living in the gym now. I actually just bought my own gym, and I'm training fighters, and I'm in boxing more. I'm more focused than I used to be in, before. So with Uma and the rematch, like you guys say, going back to what you said, I would love a rematch with Uma. I mean, it won't do much to me if I beat him again, but it will do something for the fans if I could beat him more clearly and, you know, hopefully knock him out, and, you know, shut the people up.
Vonis, this is Gabe Montoya with Max Boxing. We've spoken before. I'm curious, talk a little bit about why you bought your own boxing gym. You know, tell everybody about what's going on with that. Are you not at Wild Card anymore?
No, I'm at Wild Card. I got the Main Event Sports Club. The gym was already here. You know, they were ready, getting ready to sell the gym, and I came in and I bought the gym. And I've been here, you know, it's my fifth day that I'm running the show here, and I'm running the gym. I got some good fighters here, MMA fighters, and I do MMA and boxing. The reason is, you know, I was getting bored sitting at home, and, you know, I would go to Wild Card train and this, that, and I would come home, and I don't have a fight set up yet. I don't know who I'm fighting. They don't have anything set up for me yet. So I was like, you know, let me do something on the side. You know, I was like, what else do I know what to do better than anything? It was boxing. And then the opportunity came and I just took it. And I'm working with little fighters here, beginners and stuff like that. But during the mornings, I'm at Wild Card with Freddie. After I'm done with Freddie, I shoot over here and I take care of the gym. But my father and my little brother are here when I'm gone. So, you know, it's a good thing and it's a blessing because it's in my hometown of Glendale. And I represent Glendale, so it was really nice.
While you were preparing at the Wild Card last fight, I think he was also preparing there for a few days, you faced Sergey Zinzirek in some sparring. I don't know if you could talk about that a little bit. And also, I mean, that's a guy that should be on your radar. I mean, you guys, it's a nice complement of styles. It'd be a really good fight. Talk a little bit about that.
I heard you busted his ass up.
Sergey came to the gym. I don't even think he knew who I was. So I went over there. They came in to spar. There was an Armenian guy that helps out with his management, so he knew who I was. So he brought Sergey in to work with me. And, you know, it started off good. We were working with each other. And then as soon as they started land right hands on him, he started to buckle. And I'm not going to lie. I have some of it on tape. But I don't know if I'm going to get, you know, crap for if I posted on the web, but one of my friends had an iPhone, he was recording it, and you could have seen how I was landing punches on him. He has a very good jab, but, you know, I was getting through that jab. I don't want to talk crap about any fighter, but, you know, I faced a lot of fighters, but Zinzirek can't punch, and his jab was nothing, and I started landing very good right hands, and in round four, I landed a right hand, he buckled his knees, and he was about to go down, and I ran another right hand, and his eye just cut. And they stopped the sparring session. I stopped it. I'm like, listen, you're cut. He was hurt. I could have hit him with another punch and knocked him down and, you know, start to brag about it. I stopped as a gentleman, like, you're cut. And, you know, he was surprised. He went to the corner, so they stopped the sparring session. And that was it. And I was surprised because I thought, you know, they might stop this fight. He was fighting the Australian guy, Dawson, I think.
Daniel
he went on with the fight, and he did really well. And, you know, it surprised me that he went on with the fight, but I want to fight him, and I call him out, and everybody, you know, whoever it is, I'm not only calling top guys, you know, because I want to fight whoever. The reason why I'm calling top guys up is because I want to fight whoever people think is the best. You know, because I know there's a lot of fighters in the gym that are really good, but, you know, they don't have that exposure and stuff. People know that they're the best. But if whoever thinks they're the best, I'm ready. Let's do it.
What do you think this is? That there's a logjam. When you were the top promoter in Top Rank, they've got big shows coming up this year, and yet, you know, you're not on an undercard. Is it that you've reached a level where you need to be on HBO, or is it, you know, what is it?
Next, they told me November 6th and December 4th is my next date. So
that's
what I'm trying to, that's what I'm getting ready for. And whoever they tell me, I think if it's November, it's Showtime. If it's December, it might be HBO. And I think it was the Cotto and the Chavez card. And they offered this, the kid that they told me is probably Wallace. They offered him to fight me like three times. This is the fourth time, and I know he's not going to take the fight. He's going to find another excuse. I want to fight Dinzeluk. I want to get that world title. I mean, I feel bad calling Kanan up because I don't know how Kanan got a title. But everybody else, I respect fighters, I respect everybody, but I want to be, you know, I think that I could take on these guys, and I do really well with these guys in sparring and stuff, and I spar with Karmazan, Roman Karmazan, and I drop them in sparring. I spar with a lot of pros that are, you know, in the boxing game. People who read about them, they know them very well. They're known, but I'm not known, but I want to fight them so I could be known. Like, I know I could beat these guys 100%.
Von, is, you know, one name that's been out there that you've had some words about, and you know, I know you've wanted to fight him for quite some time, is Alfredo Pero Angulo. Pero, you know, stepped aside, decided not to fight. You know, Martinez has now said that he would be willing to fight Cotto or Chavez Jr. You know, what are your thoughts about him? What are also your thoughts about, you know, the prospects of ever getting him in the ring?
Bring it on today, tomorrow, whenever you want, bro. Anytime you want, I'm ready. I don't know what to do. I don't know if they don't want to fight me because they're scared, or they don't want to fight me. The money's not right. I don't know why. They offered a guy $750,000 to fight a fighter. He says no. He's crazy.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. I mean, it's not about the money. It's about the fight. I mean, he's losing a lot of respect for doing stuff like that. Not showing to press conferences and now, you know, wanting more money. You know, 2 years ago, he's fighting for, like, basically pennies, and now they're offering this. He doesn't want to take it. I think it's a coward move, man. Fight. Why'd you get into the sport? To make money or to fight? To prove you're the best?
Well, one guy I do know that said he would be willing to fight you is the Cuban kid, the left-hander, Irizandi Lara.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that, but he said, you know, if you fight him, he guaranteed to knock you out.
Yeah.
Is that a fight you would be interested in? I know he's only got a few fights, but he seems to be on the fast track as far as a title shot, as far as, you know, things are like that.
And I think he's running too fast. He's going to run into a wall and he's going to fall, and that's what's going to happen. But if he wants to fight, too, I'll be happy to give him his first loss. I mean, I'm saying, guys, if it's Lara, if it's anybody, I mean, I don't know why people are saying, you know, you're not that good, you shouldn't fight this guy. Okay, then I'm not that good. Beat me, bro. Like, beat me. Shut me up, basically. But they're not even doing that. They're just making excuses, and they're just going on. The only guy that replied to me was Sergio Martinez, and I'm ready to fight Sergio Martinez. Let's do it. And I met him when he was fighting Kelly Pavlik, and Bob Arum mentioned over there when we were in Dallas at the press conference. You know, he's like, you know what, if you lose to Pavlik, you could go down and fight Vonis. Well, he ended up beating Pavlik, and, you know, I'll move up to a 60 and fight him. I've even told Top Rank that I'll fight Kelly Pavlik also as well. If, you know, if we want to fight guys in our stable, then I'll fight Kelly Pavlik, you know. Lara's I would love to fight Lara, and I think it'll be a good fight if he's really man enough, saying if it really came out of his mouth, or I don't know if he speaks English or was somebody with him that, you know, decided to just throw his name out there. I'm ready to fight him too. Anybody.
Well, there we go, brother. You know, hey, I appreciate you calling in and speaking to us and letting us know what's going on in your career. And I hope you get something going because we always want, as a fight fan, we want to see the best fights possible. You know, and it sounds to me at this moment, for the last time that we have spoke on Leaving in the Ring, and for the last time I saw you in Hollywood, it seems now you are just completely frustrated. You're like, hey, now I understand where these other fighters are saying, hey, I'm being avoided.
Okay, Yeah, I see what you're saying, and I don't know what the deal is, man. I don't know what's going on. And, you know, I see why people keep turning away from the sport of boxing, and you guys do a great job of putting people back in boxing, talking about us and stuff like that. And people keep, you know, I don't know what's going on with fighters, man. Overnight, they just lost their, you know what, and they're just, you know, they're just sitting around. What are they doing?
Exactly.
I remember when it was like Vargas, Trinidad, you know, De La Hoya, Trinidad. You know, back in the days when nobody cared, they just wanted to fight. But nowadays,
yeah.
It's something weird, man. And then I'm kind of getting bored of the sport because, you know, it's like, I don't want to go pay some guy that drives taxi to come fight me, and he's only been in the gym for 1 month just because of the money. He's going to fight me, and I'm going to knock him out, and he's going to have a good record or this, that. I don't want to fight people like that. I want to fight people who are considered champions or this, that. And to be honest with you guys, it's not even about the money. I'll fight them for free. I guarantee you that because
wow.
I know I'm going to be victorious because I know what I can do to these guys.
Wow.
I'm here. Yeah. I completely agree with you. I'm tired of fighters as businessmen. These guys not wanting to risk anything anymore. And you know, there's a school of thought that says, you know, you got to build towards certain fights, and I agree with that. But you're kind of at that point now where it's time for you to be a contender that challenges these other names, whether it's a fellow contender or it's a belt holder or it's a full-on champion like Sergio Martinez. And I applaud you for that, man. That you just come out and, you know, I don't want you to fight for free, dude. But, you know, I would love to see you fight. And I hope we
do. You know what? If they want to do this and I'm willing to do that too, let's say for Angulo, whatever payday he wants, whoever it is that they want to fight, I'll be willing to put my purse on the line and say, you know what, winner takes all. Loser takes nothing. Are you okay with that? Let's do it. If you can beat me, you think you're man enough to do that, take the challenge and do it.
Wow.
Right?
Well, there you go. Well, hey, brother, once again, like I said, man, thanks for calling in and speaking to us here on Leaving the Ring. And
thanks to you guys, man. And, you know, you guys do a great job. And, you know, we read it, we see it, and we listen to it. So thank you guys very much, and I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Absolutely,
awesome,
brother.
You
take care.
Thanks a lot. Take care, guys.
All right, champ.
And, you know, God, it's always, I mean, all three interviews so far we had on, it's been very refreshing, man, and it's always good to hear from fighters say, you know what, they're tired of the politics, let's make these fights happen. You hear two fighters that say, hey, I'm here to fight, that's what I want to do. I want to show the fighters, I want to show the fans a good fight. I want to make it a fight of the year. Let me pass in right now, Jake the Snake Smith, a promoter from Baltimore. How you doing, brother? Are you on the line with us right now?
Yes, I am. How are you guys doing? That was some good interviews. I just listened.
Hey, thank you for holding on, brother. I know we had you scheduled in for 7 o'clock, but Vance had called in right before you unexpectedly, and we had to patch him in. Just to get, because I know there was some stuff popping off about his career that he wanted to get off his chest. But let me ask you this. As a promoter and hearing a fighter that's completely frustrated, and how fight fans at this moment, and my co-host Guillermo Montoya from Max Boxing, having the chance to interview Dana White, where Dana basically said, hey, boxing is dying, and this is the reason why. As a promoter, what do you do and what can you do to keep this sport thriving?
We all have to kind of stand together, get some unity together, and make these guys fight each other. They like you were saying before in the interview just previously, the fighters trying to be their own handlers and be their own businessmen makes it real difficult. Makes it very, very difficult. Somebody else should be making the decisions, and they should be training and fighting and getting ready for the big fights.
You know, being out of Baltimore and being a promoter out there, you think in a lot of ways that you got to keep the local fighters sometimes at home to build a fan base rather than try to take it to Las Vegas. You think that in some ways that hurts boxing by trying to put it in big venues all the time rather than what they used to do in the back in the old days, you know, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s where they built fighters up?
There's no question. Yeah, you definitely got to get a home base going with you, you know, support So when you do go to the big fight, you got a crowd coming with you to support you and cheer you on and root you on. I was a fighter myself too, and that always helped me. It gave me motivation when I had, you know, a bunch of people supporting. I was a local hometown fighter, and when the crowd cheered for me and rooted for me, it made me fight a little bit harder, without a question.
Absolutely. You know, really quick, you know, I want to send out my condolences to your one of your named fighters by the name of Mike, the Dream, Dietrich.
Yeah,
the American Dream. And, you know, sorry about that loss there, brother, first off.
Yeah, that was a real tough one. I appreciate you saying that, man. Thank you. Yeah, that was he was like, he was family to me.
Let me ask you this. Since that big loss for the local boxing community in Baltimore, what kind of effect, or has there been an effect in a low in the boxing community over there in Baltimore at the moment?
Not really. Actually, it's grown. A lot of the fighters really came out to a lot of the guys that weren't fighting before came out to support the fact that, you know, they didn't support the fact that he died. But my next show, I called it This One's for Dietrich, which was you know, all the local fighters all wore the flag and all that stuff, trunks, the American flag boxing trunks, and, you know, and showed his, you know, showed their love for him in the game. And they all came out. And now there's a lot of guys in the gyms and all that stuff that are, they're back. They're all back in the boxing again. I don't, you know, maybe Mike threw something down and just got, you know, stirred up the boxing community a little bit. But, yeah, boxing's still strong here.
So, in other words, you think that even though he has passed away, he has still brought the unity. He brought the unity back in. He brought something back, you know, regardless of the tragedy of what has happened. You know, it's obviously it's a terrible loss, but, you know, even in spirit, he brought good.
Yes, without a question. I mean, I have so many fighters in my gym. I have a boxing gym also, and I have a lot of fighters that are back into the gym. I'm just people that showed up to his funeral and everything, and all the fighters, they all, you know, they showed their support. That's one thing. In boxing, you have a love-hate relationship in the game where, you know, the fighters all talk trash about each other, this, that, and the other, but when it comes down to it, they all love each other.
So let's talk a little bit about this event that you're having. And you know what? I'm looking for it. I got so many stuff going on right now, brother. Rather than me just looking for it right now, because we just had so many things.
It's kind of September 17th at Dew Burns Arena in Baltimore City.
And tell me a little bit about it. I mean, what fighters are we expected to have there? You know, because we do have an international audience. Is there any way of – is this going to be you streamed? I mean, is there any way that fans from overseas or fans that are not in Baltimore are going to be able to witness a card that you're bringing?
I'm going to put it on YouTube as much as I can. And, yeah, I'm going to try to get it you streamed. I got some internet, I guess, gurus that are really helping me out on a lot of stuff. And I have a real barn burner fight going on, Jesse Nicklo versus Julius Kennedy, and that's a local, you know, grudge match in a sense. These guys, they've been wanting to fight each other since the amateur days, so they've been talking trash for a good couple of years now, so it's been brewing up for a long time. And it's two local guys, which, you know, I can't wait.
Hey, those are the good ones.
Yeah, they're the ones that really get the crowd into it. The local fans will definitely love this one.
Absolutely.
Jake, this is Gabe Montoya. I'm with I write for Max Boxing, and I co-host the show here. Welcome to the show, by the way.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. I'm curious. So do you think why do you think it is, and do you agree with this, that the kind of local promoter like yourself has kind of died off? Is it not the same as it was before? Has it become too dominated by, you know, kind of the big three of, or, you know, big two now, the Don King's not as powerful, of Golden Boy and Top Rank? Or, you know, what do you think it is? Are people not as interested on the local level?
I think the fans they're interested. The MMA, yeah, it's put a little twist on things, but boxing, it's not going anywhere. And it may have died down a little bit, but from what I'm witnessing and experiencing it, I've done a couple mixed martial arts shows myself, and boxing's, it's definitely on its on its way back big time, and when it does come back, it's going to come back real strong. And the thing I think about is people aren't doing it on the local level as much is because the fighters, they try to get too much money out of you. I mean, it's just, you know, when it's a local club show, you can't really ask for too much on a purse. And that's, you know, a lot of these local promoters or, you know, neighborhood promoters, whatever you want to call them, it's just not affordable. Especially with the venues and everything else, the commissions are being strict on you. It's just it's a tough game.
You think, in a sense, like the business model's kind of changed too, with that the fighters have become more business people and yet they're not really business people. They kind of think they know, but they don't know how it
shakedown exactly works. They try to be shakedown artists more than business-oriented with it. And not all of them. Some fighters are great and easy to deal with, and they're the ones that usually they go somewhere and make a few dollars in the game and know where their place is in the game. But, you know, sometimes you get some of these businessmen that are trying to be involved in the boxing game that don't really know the business end of it, but they know business in other, you know, categories in life. They're not really, you know, they're not the best businessmen to deal with because they're trying to be boxing people and they're not. Makes it difficult also.
Hey, this is Ernie from Boxing Scene. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. Thank you for being on the show. I had a question in regards to finding local talent. Say, you know, you're a promoter in the Baltimore area?
Yes.
Say, for example, you find a fighter, talented as all giddy up, you got him, he's under your card, he's fighting on your card. Is it really hard to keep that type of fighter from say, the clutches of the big promoters? It seems like one of the aspects of local promoting is trying to keep their talents together. I mean, we see guys like Prize Fight, still have guys like Fernando Guerrero, Sean Porter, Thompson Boxing still has Yoni Perez, Tim Bradley. Is it hard to keep that talent in-house, knowing that there are bigger promoters out there constantly trying to, you know, quote-unquote, poach your talent?
Of course, yeah. I mean, that's the thing with the fighters now. That's another reason why a lot of these local promoters don't want to do it, because they build these guys up and then have the big guy come down and swoop them away from you. It's,
yeah.
You know, and some of these guys have been like your best friends growing up, and, you know, I run a lot of amateur shows. Background, actually, the Peterson brothers who you were just talking about, they fought on my amateur shows all the time. I mean, every time I had an amateur show, Barry brought them there.
Yeah.
But that's where it comes from. You know, you build them up, you groom them, you take care of them, you put them in the right fights, you take them away to the National PALs, the Golden Glove tournaments, you know, everything you can possibly do for these kids. And then some of these big guys come in and flash, just, it don't even take a whole lot of money or don't take, just hearing somebody's name or something from, you know, and half the time they grab them, they sit them on the shelf and don't even really do anything with them. It's a tough part of the business right there.
Well, thank you. So describe the card for the 17th. What exactly is going on? How many fights? The tickets, things like that. Anybody who wants to go out to this fight out in the area, you know, go ahead. You know, just let us know what's going on.
The main event's going to be a barn burner. It's going to be a great one. I got Steve Wheeler, who's a local kid from Baltimore. He's with my stable of fighters. He's fighting a kid, Maurice Winslow. And then I have Jed Phipps, who's a heavyweight. He's fighting a kid, Theron Johnson. Jed Phipps has been around. He's 18-7, I think his record is now.
Uh-huh.
And Maxell the General Taylor, I don't know if you guys remember him. He's been off for 4 years, but he was a real good prospect coming up. I think he's 13-2.
Yeah, I think I've
Yeah, and he's got his little brother, Manny Taylor, who he's not on the card yet. We don't have him matched up, but we're trying to find something for him right now. And we're looking at Nick Kistner, who was, I think he won 5 or 6, maybe even 7 national championships as an amateur.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a nice little fighter.
Go
ahead.
No, I was going to say, to purchase tickets here, Jake, where do Fight Fans got to go? I mean, is there a website?
Yeah, BaltimoreBoxing.com. Please go to BaltimoreBoxing.com.
And what are the price ranges of getting a ticket? I mean, what are the ringsides all the way down to the bleeder seats?
$100 for ringside, $75 for ringside, you know, not the front rows of ringsides. And then we got $50 and $35 seats.
Man, those are reasonable.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh yeah, for the quality of fight, especially the main event, it's a definitely TV worthy main event that could be on one, you know, ESPN or something. Maybe even a show boxed up and coming stars or something. It's going to be such entertaining.
Oh man, I hope you put it on YouTube.
Yeah, oh, it'll be on there.
I'll say this, you know, it goes a long way. You know, you see a lot of the local shows, because I go to a lot of the local shows out here in the LA area. And some of the best shows have been guys just matched up because they're evenly matched, rather than having this one kid, this one prospect, this one guy that you really want to spotlight and keep, you know, putting him in soft. Some of the best matchups happen when it's, you know, guys like 18-7 versus 15-4, you know, and then some of the most entertaining nights I've had have been just guys that, you know,
that fight on that level that, you know, you don't really, you know, you haven't really either heard of them from a nation, you know, wide standpoint, or you know, they may be coming back and they're, you know, they need to prove themselves. And, you know, some of those cards and some of those fights make for great nights.
Some of these upside-down records can be the best. Like Martinez Clay, I'm sure you guys have heard of him.
Yep.
I mean, he's got a lopsided record, but he's one of the most exciting fighters you'll see. He comes to fight every fight he's in.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Jesse Nicklo and Julius Kennedy, they both have 1-7-1 and 1-20-2. But they both have the same style of fighting, you know? They don't take a step back, and they throw a lot of punches, and they don't have much power. So it makes for a real good, exciting fight.
Absolutely. And this is happening again in September 17th, correctly, on a Friday night?
Yes, sir. Yep.
And Baltimore. Well, you know, Jake, thank you very much, brother, for calling in and speaking to us on Leaving the Ring. And we'll definitely post it up on our website and let everybody know. And if you guys want to see a couple good fights, man, with some reasonable prices, go to BaltimoreBoxing.com, purchase your tickets, head out there, and you should be able to see David Chen out there from Leaving the Ring, the producer of the show, you know, rooting for the guys there that are going to be,
trains at my gym, actually. David does.
Hey, is that a mercy thing you got to do for him? I mean, because, you know, I've seen Dave throw punches and stuff, you know. And
hey, we accommodate everyone. Dave's good people, man. We enjoy having him there.
Listen, hey, Dave, is that right, man? Do they accommodate you, Dave?
Hey, man, you putting him on the spot?
All right, Jake. Well, thanks again, man, for calling in and speaking to us, man.
Hey, Dave, you'll be on my next pro card, all right, man? I'll look out for you, buddy.
Jake didn't tell you. He put in with all his best amateurs to, you know, get him ready for fights and stuff like that. He didn't tell you about that.
Yeah.
Secret weapon.
I'll let you fill in the blanks on that one, man. Thank you, guys, for having me.
There you go. All right, Jake. Take it easy, buddy.
All right, guys. See you all later. Bye-bye.
All right.
Take care.
Cool
guy, man.
Yeah, he is cool guy and stuff, and that's
you gotta love boxing, dude. To be a local promoter, you gotta love boxing.
Exactly,
that's gotta be a bunch of headaches. You know, it just sounds rough. You know,
you
like paying to see some good fights.
Well, this is the thing, too. You got to love the sport, especially if there's no casinos there, you know, which are going to give you site fees. And I think a lot of fight fans understand that if there's no casinos there that are going to dish out money to give you to basically back up the card that you're going to provide for the fans, for the viewers that are going to come out, for the attendance, then you're pretty much dishing out all the monies. You know, you have to have the monies to basically have a make-or-break type of situation event for you. And that's got to be true love for a sport.
That's got to be an intent. I mean, you lose money more times than not on shows like this. Unless you have a real hardcore built-in audience, you're going to lose money on these shows. And that's a true love of the sport.
Absolutely.
All the respect in the world to those guys.
All the respect in the world. Let's get down to some predictions over here really quick, and then we'll start taking some calls. If you do want to call in, the phones will go live in about 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 347-215-7598. For the callers that have been on hold, stay on hold. We're just going to make our predictions of what's going to be cracking down Saturday night. You got Yorkis Gamboa, a Cyclone. He's going to go against Orlando Salcido. Let me go really quick. Who?
Salcido.
I said that.
Salcido.
Oh, I did it. You're hearing things again. Ernie, who's your pick, bro? Really quick, who you got? Salcido.
Gamboa in four. If it goes long, Salcido has a chance, but Gamboa in four.
Gamboa in four. Ah, Gabriel Montoya. Tell me it's not going in four, brother. Gabriel's been doing pretty good this year. I'm going to have to start picking when Gabe makes a pick. What do you got, Gabe?
I was up in the 90 percentile last year for the whole year. I picked over, I think, 400 fights. I can pick my fights, but, I mean, a lot of them are winners, you know. I mean, some of them are just easy gimmies. This one is one of those. I got Gamboa in six. I think he just lights him up. I mean, the first two rounds, he's going to be cautious. He's going to be tighter than usual. He's not going to be as overly aggressive. He's going to throw the jab, kind of find his spot, see what he can, and then he's going to open up in three and four. He's going to finish the job in five and six. This is going to be his Jorge Teran.
So, you know, Dave, real quick, do you
do you agree the longer it goes, the more chance Toledo has?
Yeah.
It depends on what kind of fight that is. You know, I mean, if there's a lot of pockets where Gamboa is not throwing and laying on the ropes and letting Toledo beat on him, like Roy Jones, Glenn Johnson, then yes. But if it's, you know, him getting lit up for six rounds and he can't get him out of there and Gamboa just starts moving like he usually does and there's long pockets of him just in open space with nothing happening, then no, I think it just goes to the decision and it's boring. But I think this is a fight that Gamboa needs to be exciting in to keep himself in that conversation about Lopez. There would be a step back for him to go the distance. And dude, I mean, he's with Top Rank. You think Bruce Trampler is giving him a guy that's going to look shitty against? At this point, no. He's going to knock him out like six, maybe eight.
I say four.
I like four. Four is good. Four is a shorter story.
It's still even numbers. It doesn't matter, you know. The thing I like about the Gamboa fight here is that, for one, Gamboa has looked more comfortable in his style. You know, in the beginning, he was making careless things in there where he was getting dropped. He still makes those very careless moves, but he seems to me more stronger and even more faster since he's moved up in weight. And also, he just seems like he has finally found his place. Now he understands where he's at and the momentum of being in his prime. That's what I like about him. Now, Orlando, to me, is one of those grindy kind of guys. Those Mexican guys are going to come forward. They're going to, you know, bang. They're going to keep pressuring. The longer it goes, like Ernie was talking about, I think the longer it goes, the more trouble it could spell for Gamboa, because we've seen that with Juanma Lopez. The only difference, though, is that Gamboa's got that speed. I'm not really sure how well Orlando the Mexicano is going to be doing well against Gamboa's speed. That speed is something else. Speed kills. Speed does kill,
yeah.
You know. And getting caught, I think that since this is a big stage, he can get caught because it comes in cold. He can get caught because there's going to be Cubanos out there like crazy to celebrate their prize fighter. And he could be caught because of the fact that he knows he's got to be on top of him. He's got to eliminate that speed. And the only way you're going to eliminate that speed is to be in the inside, to be on top of Gamboa. But to be on top of Gamboa, you got to be aware of the incoming missiles that are going to be coming towards his face. And that, to me, right there, I think it could spell destruction. Now, whether he goes out in four or eight, I don't know. But I think he's going to give Gamboa a good fight. I think he's going to give him a fight worthy of us to go, okay, he's done tested this guy, but now let's move on to some big names. Let's move on to Caballero. Let's move on to Juanma. Let's move on to Marquez. Let's move on to somebody else rather than some guy right now that is just more of a grindy guy than rather than a guy that can be more dangerous. So I'm going to go with Gamboa. I think Gamboa could probably pull it off. I think, I'm going to go with the same thing with Gable. I think eight rounds. I think eight rounds of just punishing the Mexican guy until the Mexican guy finally submits and says, you know what, I think he's going to get dropped early. I wouldn't doubt that. I think he gets caught cold, you know, Ernie. But I think that pride is going to make him get back up. But I'm going to say it's going to be a one-sided fight. It's not going to be what we're going to get from Bam Bam and Peterson. We're not going to get that. We're just going to get one of those pot shot moments like, okay, what exactly? This is exactly what we expected. I don't know. It could be wrong. I've been wrong all year.
I thought you said it was short.
It was short. Short like your penis. Hey, it was short like your penis.
Wow, or your drinking prowess.
Oh, 347-215-798. You're going to want to call in right now. Go right ahead. You want to talk about boxing? We can. Let's do it. I want to hear your guys' predictions. So if you want to call in right now, it's open. What's up, Gabe?
I don't want to get all John Kerry, but, you know, I'm going to keep my pick from the next round. Listening to Ernie and just kind of thinking about what he said about Rios, that chin hasn't been tested. I like Lamont Peterson and the experience and the versatility, but that the power is very real. And Ernie kind of reiterated all the reasons I picked him on Monday. I should stick with my pick. I'm going to stick with Rios. And then I wanted us to close out the Peter versus Vladimir 2 fight, because we didn't really make our picks in that.
I'm going to pick the upset on that one. I'm going to pick the upset. I'm going to say I think it's ripe. I think it's there. I think, you know, that quiet camp that Sam Peter has had is going to work a little bit of its magic. I think I just see something, you know, it reminds me of the way Brad came into the Corey Sanders fight, just kind of expectant. People are looking at him to fight bigger things, and no one expected Corey Sanders to do anything. And here he goes, blows him out in two. I think Sam's got that power, that eraser, and I think he's going to do it.
Could happen. Not really sure and stuff. Hey, let's go really quick with our leaving the ring boxing schedule. Gabe, you got that all handled yet?
The fight schedule?
Yeah. Fight schedule.
Yes, I do, sir. September 10th, this is your leaving the ring fight schedule. These are televised fights. I do mention a couple that aren't. September 10th, Friday, 2010, at the York Hall in London, England. Showtime presents the Showbox. John O'Donnell versus Terrence Coffin, 35-6, 23-1. This schedule is subject to change, actually. I think this second fight, Tyson Fury, 11-0, is now fighting Rich Powers, which is like the best fight name of the weekend. Powers
the Fury.
I love it. At 4 points, Sheraton Hotel, San Diego, California. Those two, you know, Coffin, he's passed it. You know, O'Donnell should win. Tyson Fury's 11-0. He's fighting Rich Powers.
Been hearing a lot about this Tyson Fury. I haven't had a chance to witness any of his fights. Have you guys had a chance to check him out?
I haven't seen him. I just heard of him.
I'll say this. He's going to be forever known as the guy who uppercutted himself. I don't know if you've ever seen that little clip of him. He actually punched. The guy ducked or moved out of the way, and Tyson Fury ended up uppercutting himself.
Stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself.
It's all hell. But this guy's supposed to be a legitimate prospect out of the UK, and, you know, we'll see. I'm not really, you know, who knows?
He's got the best name going in boxing. But, yeah, Rich Power, I mean, it's not power, it's power. He's 12-0 with 9 knockouts. But if you'd ever really heard of him, with a cool name like Rich Power, if he was good, we would have heard of him. So I'm taking Tyson Fury on that one. Then
sounds like porn stars.
It's like,
Fury and Power. I'm going to be
Then we got Christopher Martin on Telefutura at the 4 Points Sheraton Hotel in San Diego versus Jose Araza. This is 19-0-2 versus 29-2. Underneath that in support on Telefutura, we've got Luis Grajeda, 10-0 versus Alan Sanchez, 5-2. I think he can get those he's going to win those fights.
Yeah, and if people are familiar with that name, Chris Martin is the guy who beat Chris Avalos.
Yes.
That's a quick turnaround. At the Commerce Bank Arena, Frankfurt, Germany, on ESPN3.com, which is awesome. You can watch it. It's a great HD feed. You know, you can watch it right from your computer if you're smart, like I'm not. You know how to set it up and connect it to your TV. And then you've got full-screen action going on there for Vladimir Klitschko. At the Commerce Bank Arena in Frankfurt, Germany, Vladimir Klitschko, 54-3 versus Samuel Peter, 34-3. This is a rematch of a fight from 5 years ago. I'm going with Vladimir Klitschko by decision. Maybe late knockout. But I think Peter's going to bring something a little extra in the beginning, which is going to wear out Vlad. It's going to be a bit of a struggle in the middle. Vlad takes over late with his technique.
I won't be surprised if Peter just stays in his stool out of frustration.
Wow.
This time around.
Saying Peter in five.
Peter in five.
Underneath that card, also you have Jonathan Banks campaigning as a heavyweight. He's a Kronk fighter, 24-1-1 versus Saul Montana, 51-15. And then Gabor Vito, 18-0 versus Philip Schuster versus 14-0-1. And Dominique Dalton, 7-0 versus Norbert Norbert Siqueiras, 7-3. At the Palms Casino Resort that same night, Las Vegas, Nevada, HBO, Yuriorkis Gamboa, 18-0 versus Orlando Salido, 34-10-2. Then in support of that, Anthony Peterson, 30-0 versus Brandon Bam Rios, 24-0-1. sort of great fights. Also on the undercard, you have Diego Magdaleno, 15-0 versus Carlos Oliveira, 25-1. Matt Korobov makes his return, 11-0 versus Anthony Greenidge, 14-4-1. Matt Korobov actually dropped Danny Jacobs in the amateurs. I've seen that fight. It's pretty good. Glenn Tapia, 7-0 versus Ed Von Barros, 10-10-1. Wow, he's 500. Rodrigo Garcia, 7-0 versus Enrique Gutierrez, 10-4. At the Rainton Meadows Arena in Houghton Ellis Springs, Wales. Steve Molitor, 32-1 versus Jason Booth, 35-5. Man, I think Molitor takes it, but I think they give the decision to Jason Booth. Underneath that, Martin Lindsay, David Kilua, 16-0 versus 34-10-2, and a bunch of other guys I haven't heard of. At the Monument Plaza del Toros, Mexico City, Mexico, on pay-per-view, the return of El Terrible, Eric Morales,
26,
versus Willie Limon, 33-2. I got Morales in decision, maybe late stoppage. I think he looks better in this fight than the last fight. At least that's what I'm hoping. You got Ana Torres, 31-3-2, versus Alicia Graf, 24-1. Also on that card is Edgar Sosa, 39-6, versus Ryan Vito, 18-6-3. Justin Savi, 24-0, versus Alberto Garza, 22-4-1. And rounding out the card is Daniel Estrada, not on the pay-per-view, 23-1-1, versus Reyes Sanchez, 19-3-1. Maybe we'll get some nice highlights. Wow, this guy at the Comanche Nation Casino, Lawton, Oklahoma, George Tadu Anapa. You got to see it on the page. Versus, he's 24-0-1 versus Jimmy Holmes, 18-1-2. Underneath that is Grady Brewer, 26-13 versus Carson Jones, 26-7-2, and kind of an interesting fight. You also got the next night, or the same night in Riverside, California, Javier Mora versus Damian Willis. That's kind of a closet classic waiting to happen.
Yep.
And that, my friends, there's a whole lot more fights going on. Get some Stopcast and track them down. Go on BoxRec. Fights happening all over the world. Fort Myers, Florida, in Argentina, London, England, Dublin, Ireland, Germany, Argentina again. And then in Albany, New York, Brian Miller versus Floriano Pagliara, 18-0-3 versus 10-4. I mean,
wow.
Boxing is not dead, my friend.
Oh, my God. You know what? The whole time, I'm going to say this. You know, the whole time you're saying all these fights, I'm thinking like, okay, where exactly are we dying out, you know? You know what? Really quick, and we only got about 12 more minutes, and I apologize for the fight fans that are on hold, and they've been trying to get on and stuff. But really quick, you know, Showtime Super 6 tournament in the super middleweight division is falling apart. And we are working as hard as we can to get Showtime on the show. Hopefully we can get them on next week. I haven't put my hump on it, on doing it. It's just been so many other things that have been in the works. We got a lot of other things that we're trying to bring and stuff that me and my co-hosts, we need to get together and have a meeting about. But yesterday, I took a drive to an MMA gym. And the reason I did is because I was invited. I was invited to come down, and I took my oldest son, who's 11 years old, who's been fighting since he was 2 years old. And, if anybody that knows me personally or has followed me from the beginning, they know that my son fights. My son's been a fighter, and you know, he's trained here and there, and he's an amateur. But so I took him down, and we're at this MMA gym, and even one of the guys says, "Hey, I follow you. You know, I listen to the radio show, and I see you on Facebook and Twitter." And he says, "You hate MMA, dude. What are you doing here?" And I told him, I said, "Look, I don't hate MMA. That's, first off, that's far-fetched. I just don't like it when people say, it's just like telling, it's like you telling me in my face my old lady is ugly. I gotta defend my bitch. You know, I gotta defend, you know, what I believe is right, and that's exactly what I do." And while we were there, I did say, "Hey man, you guys do a great job, great, you know, training, you know, hard work, man. Any combat sport is difficult, but to keep hearing this thing, it's boxing is dead." Come on, man. Do your research. Look around. If boxing was dead, myself, Gabriel Montoya, and Ernesto Gabillon, we wouldn't have a job right now. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing. At all.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, to me, it's like what we did tonight, you know, having those two fighters on. Great card. We talked about all the fights around the world. We had a local promoter on. It's just part of educating people, I think. And I don't want it to sound like, you know, I'm on a mountaintop telling people, because I'm figuring stuff out for myself while all this is going on, and I'm just trying to impart it. You know, I think that's just what it comes down to. Just, anybody that says that to me, I'm like, well, you're just not educated. And you know, I don't say that to them because it's rude. But say, like, if you look at the sport in a world way, because it is a world championship, it's actually doing quite well. How do you get it to grow in the United States? It's just by talking about it and shaking it up, and then hopefully it'll happen. You know, because right now it is. I mean, it's in a downturn, but we're in a downturn in general. You know, this country's 10% unemployment. Times are tough, man.
Times are tough.
The thing is, it's a blue-collar sport. It's a sport of the people. You know, it used to be everybody liked it. You know, it was the top two, baseball and boxing. And here you go. You know, now it really isn't. And it's also really expensive. It's, you know, $60 for a pay-per-view. There's more shows that are not as quality as they should be. And, you know, at times like this, we need entertainment, and we need it to be quality. And it does suck that these guys won't fight, you know, for very good money, and do the job that they train their whole lives to do. I don't know.
I've gotten tons of emails, and I've even spoken to some people where they're like, yeah, but this whole MMA and boxing thing, it's ridiculous, it's childish. And to a point, you're absolutely right. Absolutely right. But when you're bred into a particular lifestyle, and I think a lot of people that are in the game of boxing for a long time, you know, I'm generating back since I was a kid. You know, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, or you know, they had a love for a sport, you know, and they passed it on to me when I was a kid, go to the gym, and putting on gloves and going in the backyard. And this is the thing. My whole reason I'm saying this is because I took my son, who's a fighter, and we're at this MMA gym. And here being in Modesto, California, it's a very small town. You know, I know the Modesto people are going to get mad because I'm going to say it right now. They think it's a city. No, bro. This ain't a city. This is farmland. Okay? There's no building. You know? Hey, when you ring my doorbell, it goes, right? But it's not a city. We have a tough time to get the proper sparring for my kid. So we go down to this gym, and I'm watching them, and I've seen a couple of gyms there. I did ask. I say, hey, do you guys – because a lot of MMA gyms and karate dojos, they do provide boxing. Needless to say, it's not real boxing, but it's, you know, kind of like Dana White, Tybo Ho type of stuff, you know. And they said, yeah, man, we have boxing. I said, hey, do you have any kids here? And, you know, and I wasn't thinking, oh, boxing versus MMA. But I was thinking is my son needs work. You know, he needs to work on the skills that we work on. You know, his craft. He said, yeah, I got a young kid. So I set it up. When we walked out, I told my son, I said, how do you feel about it? I mean, we're going to come down over here on Wednesday, and you're going to get in there at 5 o'clock. You know what my boy said to me? He goes, I'm not going to let these MMA guys show me out. I'm going to destroy them if you let me go 100%. That's the mentality of a fighter. Am I right, Ernie? Gabe, that's the mentality of a boxer, you know?
Yeah, that's what it should be, you know? It should be about pride on some level. And also being smart, you know? Sometimes you got to take less money to make bigger money. I mean, Floyd, at the very least, will dog him out. He understood that. To him, $8 million against Margarito, against a guy that nobody knew who he was, despite him being, you know, deserved of a shot like that, because of what he did in the ring, Floyd understood $8 million is short money versus $25 million against Oscar, and so he went that way. And I think a lot of guys are following that model, but they're doing it on the lower level so they can't develop and get there. Everybody wants to microwave it. Nobody wants to, you know, let it simmer, you know, and cook it all night long until it's ready to be eaten. They all just want it now, and that's kind of the problem. I think, you know, and because they make so much money when they do that, because they get rewarded for doing that by HBO, fighting twice a year, and then they get these huge paychecks. I mean, Paul Williams made, what, somewhere between $900,000 and $1.5
for his last fight. He wants more than that for the Martinez rematch, and maybe he should get it, but not to the detriment of a fight. It's got to happen, and
absolutely,
especially when you're fighting twice a year, and you're not a draw. You're not bringing any tickets because you only fight twice a year, and you never fight near a place where your demographic that you've built up over a period of time can come see you and wants to see you. Where can you put him that people go, oh, man, I got to go? Maybe Atlantic City, maybe on the East Coast. But he hasn't developed that thing. I don't mean to pick on him because, Andre Berto has the same problem. Andre Durrell actually just discovered that he could play in Detroit and sell out or do very well. He's kind of
right.
An exception. But, yeah, until these guys figure it out and start behaving like fighters, like your kid, yeah, we got problems.
We got problems, exactly. In America, absolutely. Absolutely. In America, we need to wake up and open up our eyes to HBO. Come on, man. It's enough. Enough is enough. Let me pass you in the fight band really quick. Area code 619, brother, you're on live. Go ahead and tell me what's on your mind. What do you really want to talk about? Oh, no, they hung up. Because they got scared off and all that. We only got like 4 more minutes, really. Really quick, Ernesto, your final thoughts, brother, of the show.
great show. I think Brandon probably going to get a lot more fans out there after this than he had before the night's over. And I think people are going to see a great fight, but also people are going to see two great kids in that ring on Saturday, in addition to Salido and Gamboa. So personally, from a standpoint that I followed both of these kids from jump, I'm proud of them. on a personal note, I want to give a shout-out to Golden Boy's Nereida Gutierrez. I'm doing the fist pump watching Jersey Shore. So there. There you go. I told you I would, and I did it. I'm looking forward to this weekend.
What the hell was that?
I had to give a shout-out, so I did. But
I know, but the whole fist pump, what are you talking about?
Jersey,
I mean, feeling the fist.
If you've seen Jersey Shore.
You guys are, like, speaking in code tonight.
I know.
I will be.
I'm talking to Snooki.
No, I'm
wrap
E-wow.
It up, D.
I'm E-wow. And that's it. I'm done. Peace out.
Look, hey, I'm going to be the situation then, okay? I'm going to cut you off. anyways, man, hey, it's always a great night of boxing when we're here on Leaving in the Ring. It's always fun, man. It's always my pleasure to have, guests call in and fight fans listen and fight fans tweet us and Facebook and email us whatever their rant or their thoughts about. You want to email us leavinginthering@gmail.com. I apologize to anybody that's been asking for the shirts. We'll get back to you
all you bitches out there, you ain't going to get any before we get ours, man. I'm on the show and I ain't got mine.
None of us has got ours yet, man, and we're. But it's gonna come in and stuff. So thanks everybody for the support. This is your boy Dave Duenas with your two hosts, Gabriel Montoya and Ernesto Gabillon. This is Leaving in the Ring, guys. Have a good night.
Good night.
Take it easy.